go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We go off and running on this, the 16th day of July, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go on the interweb tubes if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Friday on the front porch, and so that means that we'll be gathering together in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves here in about an hour's time or so. And if you pop by the chat room right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Jeremy in Vermont and Otto DeShot, and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, chooses not to fold space into the furnace that is the man cave. Yes, yes. So we are at the end of the second full week of July, and we certainly remain not hurting for information. But before we jump into all the merriment, as it were, well. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, that means we have many thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to our 16th day of the month subscribers. That means thanks to Reinhard out on the Virginia coast. I see some really cool pictures from Reinhard's boat. Looks like a lot of fun. And thank you to Timothy. Thanks, Timothy. Thank you so very kindly. And thank you to Mark. Thank you, Mark. All of this goes toward, well, you're all partial sponsors of the program, you know, this little independent liberal progressive broadcast experiment that we've had going on for near 18 years now. Goodness me sakes alive. Isn't that just amazing? Yeah. Blows my mind. So consequently, the fundraising goal for this evening is $575 to finish the week all square. And we've had some fantastic help over the course of the week to get here and have the Horn Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle be as low a number as it is. And thanks to Darlene during our conversation last night, Darlene in Connecticut, we can start the program with a $100 challenge. Darlene will meet the first double the next $100 that comes in. Thank you so much, Darlene, and that'll get us down to only $375. So that's pretty doggone impressive as far as I'm concerned. Thank you so very much. And Jeremy is off and running with it. Jeremy just knocked out, 20% of Darlene's challenge. Let's make a miracle. God isn't willing to help this time as he's busy as usual. Funny how he stays so busy, Jeremy. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Thank you, Jeremy, here at the end of the week. Thank you so very much. And Ocean's 11? Really? Let's get started with some history on this date. Joey writes, 1790. A 68-square-mile area along the Potomac River, which resembles three-quarters of a baseball diamond, was designated as the permanent seat of the government of the United States. The area became known as Washington in the District of Columbia. George Washington, somehow or another, made bank on that. Had some swampland on the Potomac that he wanted to sell. And, well, as a matter of the undying thanks of the young republic, we bought it.
Jeffrey
wants to point out, and since we're talking about baseball diamonds, take a swing at it.
You know, D.C. is shaped like three quarters of a baseball field, with the missing piece being the part of the field that would be the third baseline running from third base to home plate, or when Trump was in office, you could say the Third Reich running from Washington to his homies based in Moscow. Trump truly was Putin's Moscow mule, and according to the hotel maids, Trump became so inebriated after drinking too many Moscow mules that he pissed his bed. So, according to sources, Trump did not actually intentionally wet the bed where the Obamas slept, as he was too drunk to stand up. There were bed sheets involved, and that was due to the fact that Trump was three sheets to the wind. Oh, dear God. I think we're playing a little fast and loose this afternoon. In any event, at this point, Washington, D.C. should now include that line from third base to home plate, because that would encompass the wealthiest county in this country, a county where all of D.C.'s money currently resides. That county is the aforementioned none other than Loudoun, the home of the most lucrative living avaricious assholes in this country. Yet once upon a time, it was a square. It wasn't just the land across, Virginia was included too, but Virginia took it back. Actually, Jeffrey, Joey corrects, Loudoun County would be a bit west of that diamond, but you're correct. All the low-down Loudoun leeches, many of whom are military contractors, have drained our government of vast resources.
There are old maps you can see, and Washington, D.C. looks like a square that's turned on its point. And Virginia took it all back because, lo and behold, the people in D.C. weren't going to be allowed to vote. And after all the wrangling and ruckus of the Constitutional Convention, Virginia said, sorry.
Jeffrey responds, I believe you could say that of all the Democrat diamonds from all the diamonds from D.C. are hiding in military planes' sight. Oh, and by the way, should the Republicans regain the Congress in 2022, I move to amend the name of Washington, D.C. You see, the District of Columbia was so named because Columbia is the feminine form of Columbus, which was a tribute to Christopher Columbus, and sadly the capital of our state in Ohio is named after this scoundrel who was a racist, torturing, genocidal monster. You forgot, maniac. Ohio should change the name of its capital, as should the D.C. and the nation's capital be revised. Yes, if the Republicans take over in 2022, the D.C. and Washington should stand for, considering Republicans are so worried and all awoke by the cancel culture, D.C. should be amended to stand for Democracy Canceled. And by the way, speaking of baseball, Darlene hit another grand slam last night, as usual, hit it out of the park. Joey and I love Darlene's incredible acumen. On this day in 1969, Apollo 11 took off from the John F. Kennedy Space Center, headed for the moon, and returned safely, eventually splashing down into the Pacific Ocean after the first successful moon landing. Ironically, and sadly, on this day 30 years later in 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr. took off from Teterboro in New Jersey, and as we all know, JFK Jr.'s splashdown in the Atlantic Ocean was not a successful landing. A little rough way to say. But, you know, then again, because cue balls, if you recall the program from last week, there are human beings out there. I personally think they're pod people, but never mind. Human beings out there who think that John F. Kennedy Jr. is going to run on the same ticket with Donald J. Trump in 2024. Mother McCree. Jeffrey has the flight. Yes, according to sources, when JFK Jr. was flying over the Connecticut coastline, he spotted Darlene's mullet back. Leave Darlene's mullet out of this. That was cute. Which caused him to become completely disoriented. That giraffe. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, the 16th day of July, with Giraffery flying as high as usual. I think Jeffrey got into something today. Y'all didn't go to, like, that Mexican restaurant and hang out with... No, and there's no Long Island iced teas involved, are there? Anyway, there's a $10 Darlene's Mullet Challenge on the table. Thank you for honoring Darlene that way. And so that means there's $110 worth of challenges, which would knock down a whole bunch of the fundraising goal and would be extremely helpful at this point of the point in time, this time of year. I wanted to share something with you. I got a lovely email earlier from a dear friend of ours in faraway Singapore. Hi, Robin. It's been a year. Many years since I last wrote. Last time, I wrote to Bob. I wrote to you about the strange coincidence of me using my father's toolbox in my online far-distance eulogy to him, and you talking about your father's toolbox on your show. Yeah, it's amazing how these little coincidences just keep piling up. A year has passed, and it's certainly been a strange one. I think probably for you even more so. One might say. Yesterday, I was talking about you. My ears were burning. I was talking about you when we were having dinner with my daughter and her boyfriend, and we were somehow talking about LGBTQ issues and our unintended prejudice and so forth. Bob Kincaid had always been somewhere in my background as a reassuring voice of hope for a better America and a community that represents what I want this world to be. You had become such a familiar voice, and I had really started to see you as a friend, hoping that someday we might catch up over a beer. When I heard your announcement to become Robin, I was shocked, but of course fully supporting and admiring the courage of your transition. At the same time, I started to listen less frequently and avoided checking up on you because somehow I guess I was dealing with cognitive dissonance, or perhaps a shaking up of my belief system relating to gender. Then, last evening, my daughter, as we talked, Googled you, and I saw the photographs of who you are now. First, let me say that I honestly think you look like a very nice lady, and I really still hope we can have a beer together sometime. I do, too. I so do. I think that would be wonderful. Here or in Singapore. Fine by me. I'd prefer Singapore, but, you know, that's me. Now, here there's a cocktail over there called a Singapore Sling. Never mind. I know you said this is not something you choose to do, but something that you have no other choice but to do. I may not be the only one who found it difficult to empathically comprehend the why, but I'm very happy my daughter confronted me, and I just wanted to say hi again. I'm back online and look forward to following your endeavors. Good luck, take care, and stay safe. Your friend in Singapore. That came in about 11 o'clock this morning, and it touched me more than folks can know. It's just a beautiful expression, and I love how he came around to explaining the evolution in his own thinking. We've been friends for a very, very long time, and I appreciate it so very, very much. But y'all touch me on a regular and routine basis. You go straight to the center of my heart, and I just wanted to take a moment to thank each and every one, and especially you. You having written this lovely note. It has been a year, and it absolutely boggles my mind. But you're never far from my thoughts. Because one of the beauties of this community is that I can know that there are people who are part of this community all over this planet, and that we share a commonality of goodwill, and yes, indeed, hope for the future. Because I just don't have any time, and I don't have any time in me, as frustrated as I can get. I have no time in me for nihilism or nihilists. And so, with that said, I just want to thank you there in far Singapore. God, it would be so fabulous to see someday. Such a world, and so little time to see it in life. But I just wanted to thank you for the note, because it absolutely made my day. It was wonderful. Just wonderful. A note coming from Elberton, Rhode Island. James S. Hogg was once Texas's railroad commissioner. His daughter, Ima, was a major patron of the Houston Symphony Orchestra. I attended a junior high school named after Hogg. So, railroad commissioner, and yes, the daughters were Ima and Eura. That's trivia from a previous program. Thank you. Thank you, Albert. I'm glad you sent that along, because I just remember seeing his statue there in Austin on my lone trip to that Lone Star State City. Mm-hmm. A word, if I may, about Cuba. This from Ron in Raleigh. You're aware, as I am, about what's happening in Cuba vis-a-vis the ongoing protests. I look at our for-profit press and the one-sided and slanted coverage. Our political class is also feeding the American people a load of BS. Ron directs me to an article in Jacobin magazine that gets at the truth, he says. I'll read it later this evening. I would like to present a few statistics, if I may. The first is infant mortality in the U.S. Number 176 in the world at 5.22 deaths per 1,000 births. Cuba is 188 with 4.19 deaths per 1,000 births. Lifespan in Cuba is 74.66 years. In the U.S., it's 73.02. Homelessness, which is the number of homeless on a nightly basis in Cuba, that number is zero. In the U.S., it's 517,715 per night. In healthcare, the U.S. ranks 37th, while Cuba ranks 39th. Cuba has a 99.8% literacy rate. The only ranking where the U.S. far outstrips Cuba is Press Freedom, where the U.S. sits at 44th in the world, and Cuba lags far behind at 171st. In the article is reprinted a tweet by Val Deming, which has caused me to lose a little respect for her, although I understand why, as a Florida representative, she needs to placate her Cuban voters. From the stats included, one should be able to discern that the 60-year U.S. embargo and the ability of for the U.S. to threaten and bully other countries to avoid helping Cuba may be the major cause of Cuba's economic problems. Of course it is. It absolutely is. We have been trying to strangle Cuba for longer than I have been upon the earth. And, you know, somewhere, maybe, down the line, up the line, down the line in terms of history, somewhere in the distant historical future, maybe historians will take a look and say, wow, that was stupid and mean and in contravention of everything that the United States of America claims that it stands for. Because Cuba has been one long foreign policy disaster, not on Cuba's part, or as John Kennedy would say, Cuber, but on ours. And it's part of the larger disaster that has been American foreign policy in this hemisphere. You know, James Monroe is dead, and it's damned well time that his doctrine be too. Sure, the idea behind the Monroe Doctrine was that we would tell colonialist foreign powers to stay the out of the Western Hemisphere. How well that worked out? Not so much. I mean, look. It was a French relative of Napoleon. Well, what Napoleon? I don't know which Roman numeral. Who was set up as de facto dictator of Mexico, and it was Porfirio Diaz who said, and I won't bother to torment the pronunciation of the Spanish, but poor Mexico, so near to the United States, so far from God, or maybe backward, the other way around, so far from God, so near to the United States. Even Canada has not completely avoided the plague of American foreign policy, but has managed, because it was for so long still a crown colony or a crown commonwealth, somebody we didn't want to screw with, because early on in American history, and most people don't know this, we learned the hard way not to with Canada, because every time we did, we got our little merkin asses handed to us. And while we talk about the British burning down the D.C. in the War of 1812, yeah, technically they were doing it under the Union Jack, but it was, as I understand it, mostly Canadian troops who did the job. Yeah. And then there are various misadventures in on the Plains of Abraham in Montreal. Yeah, our history, but there is hardly, south of the United States, there is hardly a political body that we have not at some time or another tried to mess with, finagle in, and otherwise make homicidal mischief, with particular emphasis on Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and poor, bleeding El Salvador. Then there's Panama, right? Hey, let's make a canal. Colombia, where we sprayed a deadly poison because of our insane paranoia over pot and coca. Peru, Argentina, Chile. Good God, what we did propping up Pinochet should probably be a big counter against any... Well, hopefully Richard Nixon is roasting in hell over that, and hopefully someday soon, old Scratch himself, Henry Kissinger, will join him. So thanks for that note, Ron. I appreciate it sincerely. And yeah, I understand Florida politicians, Democrat or Republicans, have to do a fair amount of groveling because of the inordinate influence that the anti-Castro cranks, you know. And we say anti-Castro, we should really call them what they are: pro-Batista. They're not pro-freedom. They're pro the autocracy and the dictatorship that preceded the Cuban Revolution. The Cuban Revolution didn't have to necessarily play out the way it did. It wound up the way it did because of our screw-ups. It's one of the reasons that I cringe every time I hear someone talk about, well, you know, there have been good Republican presidents. What about old Ike? We screwed up Guatemala under Eisenhower. We screwed up Iran under Eisenhower. And we began screwing up Cuba under Eisenhower. Deeply frustrating. And so, if you know American history, you know better than to think that we have been a benign presence in this hemisphere. For any good we have done, we have often done every bit as much manifest wickedness, frankly. And I don't throw that word around a lot. Steve disagreeing somewhat. Steve in New York. Cuba, as dumb and stupid as the embargo on Cuba was and is, that was not the biggest contributor to their economic woes in the least. It contributed to it, but it was a cause. In fact, Castro used the embargo to deflect the revolution's many failures and the decadence with which Castro and his cronies lived. And if people want, we'll talk about it on the front porch, Steve says. all autocratic regimes are going to be corrupt because it is in the way of autocracy. And even when they seem benign, like the benevolent dictators of the Gulf states in the Persian Gulf, it comes at a horrible price because people can be killed on a word. It all depends on how one defines freedom. You got the freedom to keep your head down, watch your mouth, don't make waves, and then everything can be hunky-dory. And again, as I mentioned, I think last night, or maybe the night before, it all runs together. I've been reading as much as I can about what China has been doing to the Uyghurs. And it is criminal. I mean, it is truly world-class criminal, but it's... hearing a story about it and thinking about that line from the Melian dialogue in... I think Thucydides, is it? Where the statement is made, great nations do as they will, or do as they want. Small nations do as they must. And that was when the Athenian Empire was trying to force its will upon a tiny island city-state that didn't want anything to do with Athens' war with Sparta, and tried to resist, and for its trouble was reduced with extreme prejudice and brutality. And we have that as a reminder to this very day. Get back to the Monroe Doctrine for just a minute. You know, James K. Polk started the Mexican War on a bullshit pretext, and it was, I remember railing about it in 2003 and 2004, because the Iraq War was just the Mexican War with different cuisine and different cultures. It was an entirely made-up line of unmitigated crap that was peddled to the American people under the sickening guise of patriotism and international intervention. Yeah, OIL, OIL, Operation Iraqi Liberation. Remember it well. Steve adds, Miami Cubans. I had a good friend from South Florida a number of years ago who used to tell me exactly what you said. The Miami Cubans had no loyalty to the U.S. other than a place to hang out until Castro was gone. I think I'm recalling this right, but he told me that every New Year, they used to toast the New Year with these words, next year in Havana. They wouldn't go back if they had the opportunity. If you set up an American-style democracy, ha! And offered them and said, okay, y'all can leave now. They wouldn't go. Hell no. They've got political control of an important United States state. And they're comfortable and happy. And they're going to go back and actually work. Piffle. And that is not racism or ethnocentrism or anything. No. It's pure politics. But they've got a lot of bitterness. And, of course, the reason, as Steve points out, New Year's, is that Batista fell on New Year's. And so, consequently, in order to be what? In order to make everything work out the right way, you know, make it work out to an even number or whatever. Well, it needs to be New Year. They need to overturn the regime in Cuba on New Year's, too. And you know what? All those numbers that Ron and Raleigh cited, every last one of them would get worse and worse and worse if an American-style democracy were to be set up in Cuba. This is not me in any wise endorsing the autocratic regime in Cuba it is simply pointing out that you let capitalism take hold there, and capitalism will do what it does best, and that is extract profits, and the profits will be extracted from those least able to pay for them. In particular, that 99.8% literacy rate, that'll start falling like a paralyzed falcon if we got our mitts on Cuber. Yeah. And we've been telling lies to support wars for a long time, as Chris in Portland points out. USA horseshit stories. Let us not forget remember the Maine, nor forget the Gulf of Tonkin launching bloodthirsty wars. You're absolutely right, Chris. Well said. Well said. Okay, Steve says, I have a dear friend who is an attorney and does a ton of asylum work in the Uyghur community. If you want to know anything about their cause and their suffering in China, let me know. That would be an interesting conversation to have on the program. And again, that line from the Melian dialogue applies not only to the United States, it applies to China, too. China's going to do what China wants to do. And smaller states will do as they must, and they will learn, those smaller states, that hard lesson the more that China gets its hooks into states around the globe, because they're very, very busy. The Belt and Road Initiative, basically recreating the old Silk Road across Eurasia, and then, of course, all of their interests in mining and various forms of extraction around the African continent. It doesn't work out well because they take their political philosophy with them. I don't know if you're aware, but the State Department, the Biden administration via the State Department has issued a warning to American companies doing business in Hong Kong, saying that their data may not be secure, and that they do business in Hong Kong now at their peril. Because China is doing what China wants to do, and that is putting its 1.4 billion people boot down on the neck of Hong Kong. And why? And anyone who didn't see this coming when the British left, British colonialism's sun has set too. But no way was China. Sorry, we're in Kennedy speak mode this evening. China. Going to let an independent colony just sit there off its coast. It's the same reason that Taiwan is so vigilant about looking, and rightly so, to the point that Japan made a statement recently saying that China would go after Taiwan when hell freezes over, as far as Japan is concerned. That whole geopolitical dynamic is absolutely fascinating from a standpoint of history. Not history! But we all know, we were talking about how, Darlene and I were talking last night about how we don't necessarily know, there are generations in this country now who went, World War II, what? And that's so alien to me because I grew up being told about it both in the European theater and the Asian theater. And because my father served aboard an aircraft carrier in the South Pacific, all over the Pacific, frankly, I heard story after story about the kamikazes. Kamikazes? Hell, there's even a drink named after them. Giraffe doesn't switch over from Long Island iced teas to kamikazes sometimes, because those things will get you where you want to go in a hurry. But kamikaze means divine wind. And it all has to do with the time when the Chinese Empire was under the rule of the Khans. Khan!
and the Chinese Empire assembled a massive fleet. Long before there was a Spanish Armada, there was a Chinese one, and they did. And when they were trading, they did brilliant stuff. The treasure fleets that went out from China very nearly and may have actually reached the Western Hemisphere. There is some scant evidence to suggest that that might actually have happened. But in this particular instance, they gathered a fleet together to invade the Japanese home islands. And if they had landed, Japan would have been screwed. But instead, that fleet ran into a typhoon and was blown to pieces, and thus Japan remained independent of mainland China. And that typhoon that was so instrumental in keeping China out of Japan was deemed to be divine. It was, in fact, a kamikaze, a divine wind. Just like a divine wind, you know, because they ran to their churches, the English did, to give thanks to Almighty God for the storms that played a profound role in stopping the Spanish Armada, for which the English were ill-prepared to deal. Yeah, it's true, Steve. Steve says, when you and I grew up, I'm sure your family members, those in World War II or those who were just alive during that time, only had to call it the war, and we knew they meant World War II. Yeah. Absolutely. So, wow. The program got going with a nice little bit of geopolitics, international stuff. That doesn't mean that there's nothing going on back here. Far from it. Nitwit Nero has been having a hissy all day long, as is his wont. He simply cannot enjoy anything anymore because he is what he always was, and that is a pathetic wad of anxieties, jealousies, bigotries, and hatreds. And today he's been going off on Georgia, but, well, he was also stung pretty badly by all of this information that's coming about his nefarious attempt at a presidency, the maladministration, saying earlier today, and you can just hear him dictating it.
I said capitalize that. Despite what is being reported in one of the many fake books that are coming onto the market, Bill Barr never once told me he thought I was going to lose the election. That's because of information now coming out of I Alone Can Fix It, the book by Carol Lenig and Philip Rucker, in which they report that, in fact, Bill Barr did insist upon a meeting with Trump to tell him that he was fucking up and needed to straighten up, or else he was going to lose the election. There's no reason to doubt what they report. And it's kind of confirmed by the fact that, well, the guy who only, anytime he denies something, you know that he's admitting it.
In fact, it was quite the opposite. He told me that I should win. In retrospect,
see, this is how you know somebody else is writing it, retrospect.
Had the election not been rigged and stolen, I said capitalized R and rigged and capitalized and stolen, I would have won easily, and our country would not be in the horrible position it is now with open borders, yet capitalized borders too. Inflation, yeah, that too. And massive jumps in capital C crime and cities that have no chance of ever recovering under Democrat leadership.
Do you think the people who have to hang out with him at, you know, that bedbug infested hellhole Mar-a-Lard ass, or up at Bed Monster? Jesus, really? Bed Monster? Well, Bed Mushroom. Just look around every now and then and whisper to each other, "Did you bring the Thorazine darts today?" "No." "Fuck." Because it sure... How could you not? I mean, because we already know that everybody around him's been making fun of him all along because he's a fucking clown. We had a rather rousing little discussion toward the end of the program last night about Donald Trump, malicious idiot or sociopath. And I want to be a peacemaker. Why can't he be a malicious idiot sociopath? And then it was not long after that first email came along. I mean, by not long, I mean literally 9 minutes.
"Despite the fact that the 2020 presidential election was rigged and stolen," that's capital R rigged, capital S stolen, "and while numerous people, including the outside public..."
Is that the outside public? Who then are the inside public?
"We're saying we should bring in the military," capitalized military too. Military is always capitalized. "I never even gave it a thought. The writings within these third-rate books are fake news and General Milley..."
Put the dick fingers around General. "Some general." Well, I mean, he actually is a general.
"General Milley, who Mattis wanted to send to Europe in order to get rid of him, if he said what was reported, perhaps should be impeached or court-martialed and tried or something."
I added the "or something." No, he wants to impeach a general. Yeah, no kidding. Whew!
"Never once did I have a discussion with him about bringing in the military or a coup, which makes sense, because I lost total confidence in him and the way he handled himself in our little walk to the church. He tries to be a tough guy, which he is not. I'm a tough guy. But he choked beyond belief. He's a choker. As soon as a microphone was stuffed in front of his face or at the mere sight of the fake news media. So there was no talk of a coup. There was no coup. It all never happened."
Yeah, January 6th didn't fucking happen. You got that?
"And it's just a waste of words by fake writers and a general who didn't have a clue. What there was a rigged..."
Capitalized rigged. Rigged is always capitalized. "And stolen..." stolen, still capitalized. "Election. And those facts have come out and are coming out loud and clear because of the rigged election. How many times do I have to tell you? And our country, yes... will suffer, like, because there's no other country on earth like the new United States of America, will suffer like perhaps never before with open borders." What, do I have to give you a style manual? "Crime, yes, and inflation, which will eat everyone alive just like me. I'm the bed monster."
Oh, God.
Come on. Iwanka, your life's going to be better if you can just get him into the home. You're old enough. Can't you remember when Granddaddy Fred lost his shit? Remember? Didn't even know who you were anymore. Thought you were the little Russian hooker that he had ordered up for that, right? Yeah, come on, Iwanka. You got to remember. You know what's disgusting? Or, well, at least depressing. Iwanka and I both have a Granddaddy Fred. At least mine wasn't as nasty as hers was.
"The ultimate kraut. I know all about the krauts. He was the ultimate kraut."
I don't even want to know how he refers to... Well, yeah, we already know how he refers to the people from the
shithole countries.
Yeah. Ralph says,
"I'm not the pussy. You're the pussy."
You know, maybe if I was religious... Maybe this would be time to, you know, do that old school English thing and give thanks to Almighty God for the fact that we survived, at least, well, the United States, minus 600,000 people survived the reign of error, the reign of horror. But it ain't over. It's so not over. How do I know? I know it's not over because too many people are still suffering. Enter Judge Andrew Hanen. Andrew S. Hanen. Judge Andrew S. Hanen sits in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas. He is 67 years old, and he's a judicial nightmare. And he is a living reminder of the fact that Nitwit Nero didn't start all this shit. No, he didn't. That every awful thing that we decry in the United States of America can be laid at the altar of some godforsaken Republican, but it wasn't all, not by any stretch of the imagination, not all Trump. Judge Andrew S. Hanen is a United States District Court judge thanks to George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. He took office in May of 2002 when George was packing the court, but that wasn't court packing because a Republican was doing it. See how it works? He was raised in Waco, Texas, got his law school from Baylor, right there in Waco, in which case we ask the eternal question, what does God need with a university on the lukewarm waters of the Brazos River? And today, he put the shiv in the hopes and dreams of tens of thousands of children. Yeah. He ruled today, Andrew S. Hanen did, in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas, that the Kenyan Muslim usurper, Barack Obama, did more than a United States president legally can do when he created the DACA program. He said that DACA is, in fact, illegal. And that means the Dreamers are back in jeopardy. This is, to say the least, disgusting. He created a little bit of wiggle room, though, because he said, it's illegal, but I'm not going to order that the program be immediately shut down. Well, how very lovely of you, Judge Heinous. Jesus. But again, that's George W. Bush. And the same kind of people who were behind George W. Bush, perhaps some of them went on to be never Trump Republicans. But they're still exactly who they were. Jesus. Meanwhile, we owe a debt of gratitude to Representative Joyce Beatty of Ohio. She got arrested yesterday at the United States Capitol. A member of the House of Representatives was arrested yesterday afternoon at the Capitol of the United States. You know why? Was she attacking the Capitol of the United States? No. Was she trying to batter the windows open with a flagpole or a police riot shield? No. She was arrested for protesting in support of the right of American citizens to vote. That. Disgusting. But she's a hero. Unlike the maggots, the grunting and barking, hooting and squealing, shrieking maggots who attacked our government, attacked we, the people, on January 6th. And since we started with a little conversation about Cuba, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is now being attacked by a member of her own party. On her Twitter account, AOC said, "We must also name the U.S. contribution to Cuban suffering, our 60-year-old embargo. I outright reject the Biden administration's defense of the embargo. It is never acceptable for us to use cruelty as a point of leverage against everyday people." Well, this inspired a response from one of those cranky Cubans, Debbie McCarcel Powell, who said, "This is a matter of national security. The U.S. must act." And started grunting about the failed policies of a communist regime that has violated human rights, imprisoned and killed dissidents. Oh, for fuck's sake. And Lord God, how I despise shitty writing, especially in journalism. This from Politico. "Meanwhile, Florida Democrats see an opportunity for Biden to help bring democracy to Cuba and as a result attract the Hispanic voters who fled the party in the November election." Really? We're going to bring democracy to Cuba? Like we brought democracy to Iraq? Or Vietnam? Yeah, sure. Well, at least there aren't any Cuban dreamers. Because remember, we reserve delicate, dainty treatment for Cubans who arrive in the United States that we afford to no one else. Remember the dry foot policy? As long as a Cuban can get a dry foot on U.S. soil, it's welcome, one and all. Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Haiti. Guatemala, Nicaragua. No, they all get stuffed in detention centers. But the Cubans, come on in! I despise preferential treatment in all of its forms. And so, yesterday, President Biden referred to Cuba as a failed state. Well, where is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said wrong? It looks to me like she said something that was completely accurate. Because you cannot consider the situation that is and has is now and has obtained in Cuba without talking about the stupidity, the monumental stupidity of the embargo. God Almighty. So back to back to Judge Haynes down in Texas. Part of his ruling, he said he wasn't going to strike DACA down outright, but by God, he said no more dreamers need apply. Future DACA applications are barred under his heinous ruling, but he didn't touch the permits that are present currently for hundreds of thousands of people who were brought here as children and had no say-so, no choice in the matter. See, that's that right there is the very textbook definition of judicial activism. Remember, I'm so old I can remember when the Republicans had absolute hissies over judicial activism. But that's exactly that, because he doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to piss off people. He doesn't want to piss off people against the Republicans, you know, right now. But he's sure as shit willing to make sure that there aren't any more. And this makes things harder for the Biden administration, because with the people who come across and have been coming across, well, some of those come with children. Some children come alone. But apparently, in his ruling, Judge Haynes has said that if they have not already applied and do not already have a permit, that by God, they can't apply. But that's just Republicanism. Shit on poor people. Shit on desperate people. There we go. That's not the maggots. That's just Republicanism. That's just the libertarian influenced Republican Party that says, I got mine, baby. Fuck you. Egg'em foo. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Christopher, so very much. We are 30% of the way toward Darlene's challenge. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Christopher. That was very helpful. Thanks for being such a such a committed member of this community. Thank you. So let me get a message over to the old holler tree for Sparky to use his Mickle powers and connect me in. And we'll get the Friday on the Front Porch conversation going. Thanks as well, Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth, so very much. And now we are down to, Yeah, we are 55% funded for Darlene's challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. Well, you're right. Ron and Raleigh, who is absolutely allowed to use it's his gimmick. Robin. What we have in Judge Haynes's ruling is a fine example of compassionate conservatism. Because remember, compassionate conservatism was invented by the guy who gave Judge Haynes his job. And I'm sure as far back as 2003, the Federalist Society was eagerly vetting potential judges to make sure that right-wing maniacs would get the black robe so that someday down the line when they needed to screw somebody, that judge would be there to do exactly that. Because they don't take days off. They're always thinking about not just the present, but the future. And now, you know, with all the hooting and grunting and barking and squealing about critical race theory, we know that they're also concerned with the past. They're more than willing to rewrite history. Let's run over to the old holler tree where we keep the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable around which we gather each and every Friday and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
Good, good.
Enjoying 95-degree weather.
Well, God, you're in the middle of a cold front, aren't you?
Yeah, well, it's almost 20 degrees cooler than it was last Saturday.
Somebody must be laying down on the job in hell.
I think so.
So are you and Grady just hanging out in the cool air conditioning?
Yeah. The man cave doesn't even have a computer in it anymore. I moved it to the house because it was so hot in here.
Yeah, it's not. That's not good for a processor, that kind of heat. So, Sparky, yeah. Have you been following the floods in Germany and Belgium?
I've seen a few blurbs about it on the news.
God almighty, what a mess. I mean, 120 people dead? With thousands more missing in Germany and Belgium? So bad that the cell phone networks have collapsed? And you know, the thing is, at least their media can say things like, hey, look, it's climate change. As opposed to ours that throws a fit if, for instance, a member of the Biden administration says that climate change may have had a role in the collapse of the condo in Surfside, Florida, which seems almost impossible not to be the case.
Yeah. I don't know why they... MSNBC has this story about Germany. They were talking about climate change. Huh?
Yeah. But intense rainfall. I mean, it, you know, it rains in Germany. But there were warnings beforehand that there could be a lot of flooding. But I don't think people had any comprehension of just how bad it could be. 2 months, get this, two months worth of rainfall in 2 days.
In a day?
2 days. Well, Wednesday into Thursday, a day. 4 to 6 inches of rainfall in that 24-hour period, yeah. And I checked in with some of my friends in Germany, and they told me, unfortunately, Germany did almost nothing to prevent such foreseeable catastrophes.
It would be interesting to see how their somewhat decentralized electrical system with solar power has managed to hold up compared to Texas with their snowstorms and how it dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, Roger. I don't know. I'm looking here about to see if they've got anything about the power grid. But God, you got to have some substantial rain to knock out, you know, to bring down cell towers. I would assume.
Well, a cell tower probably wouldn't get hit with the flood water, but the electrical feed to the cell tower would be what would take them down. Unless the flooding was so bad that the towers got washed away.
Well, that's what I'm
hard to fathom.
I mean, that's where I'm not sure with the
possibility.
Not what? Well, they're saying cell phone networks have collapsed. I don't know that. So it could just be the electrical supply. I don't know. But cell phone networks have collapsed. I see collapsed and I see cell phone, and I'm thinking towers came down.
Yeah. Did you see the story today that they signed the first project labor agreement on offshore wind project?
No, that's promising.
It's the one they're going to build off of Massachusetts, huh? Because Elizabeth Warren had a press release on it.
So who did they sign with? Who did they sign the PLA with?
Any of the construction trades, they'll all sign up to the agreement. I've worked under project labor agreements before.
I was just wondering how many of the building trades would be involved in something like that. God, damn near all of them. Carpenters and millwrights, IBEW, laborers.
Yeah. Who's to say?
Sheet metal workers.
Yeah. You know, well, the project labor agreement just means that they don't have to, all the unions work under the same agreement. Instead of their own little agreements, like the IBEW has an agreement that,
right. Instead of doing a dozen little side agreements, it's all just one omnibus document.
Yeah, and then everybody that gets hired or has to be union.
Back to the cell phones. It appears that it might have been a hacker attack.
Really? Where are you seeing that, Roger?
Telecomlead.com. Level 3 internet outage today, and it also hit the United States and let's see who else. Level 3 Communications, based in America, now operating under the name CenturyLink. Internet carriers to Europe, Asia, North America, UK, Germany, United States that all use Level 3 network.
No, that sounds like a separate animal, because this is stuff that was going on, you know, Wednesday with regard to some of the cell networks in Europe.
Well, I just did a kind of a quick Google search, and all they were talking about was potential hacker stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, I saw
I'm still searching here.
Yeah. You had me confused for a minute. I saw a statement something you put in the chat. I'm just a little over 80. You're talking about temperature, not age, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, Roger's not 80 yet.
Well, I got about 4 more years to get there.
Yeah. Don't get in a hurry. Yeah, you're talking.
Oh, I'm not in any hurry. I wish I could be back to about 65.
You're talking about the temperature, but you're talking about the temperature in Eugene.
Yeah, the temperature in Eugene's just about 80.
How's the garden looking?
Oh, I'm eating lemon cucumbers. I've picked a few peppers, none of the fancy ones. I've got some really nice tomatoes on, you know, they're still green, but that heat wave that came through, I mean, I went, you know, like a week and a half and no fruit set. So I'm going to have a flush of tomatoes, and then down the road, I'll get some more.
Oh, that'll be nice. I still haven't had my first garden fresh tomato here yet, and I'm kind of grieving.
Well, I've got a couple of paste tomatoes that are starting to turn pink, but my Cherokee purples are still very dark green.
Oh, I love those. Those are so good. And they're really... The Cherokees are real lobey, aren't they?
Well, mine are pretty well round.
Oh, okay.
They don't globe. They don't get... Some of them do. Get, you know, a little bumpy on the skin and have crevices, but most of them are just regular, nice hamburger-sized tomatoes.
Oh, yummy. No, you said getting back to.
Talking about a hamburger size, that's one slice on a hamburger, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Getting back to Castro. When Castro first shut down Batista, he really did try to be friends with the United States. But what he really wanted to do was to get rid of the mob that was running the casinos and the whorehouses in Havana, and he wanted to return the agricultural land to the people who were working it and kick out, and this may not be accurate, but he wanted to kick out the multinational hacienda folk that had taken over all the farmland down there,
right,
and give it back to the people. And the United States just could not have, like, United Fruit be kicked out of Cuba, because, I mean, shit, that's the rich class in the United States that's getting fucked over. And the mob people didn't like him either. And what was interesting is that Kennedy, just before he was assassinated, was having back-channel communications in working to try and normalize relations with Cuba after the Cuban Missile Crisis, because he really wanted to get the United States back helping out the economy, as opposed to it being a Russian subsidiary. And there's good discussions about, I mean, originally they tried to say that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Cuban agent and had been to the embassy in Mexico and all that bullshit. But there's a certain amount of evidence that it was the mob and those folk that did Kennedy in, because he was really trying to normalize relations with Castro. And what a lot of people don't realize, Castro got educated in the United States and played semi-pro baseball here in the United States. And he was not anti-U.S. He was anti what the U.S. had done to, or U.S. corporations had done to Cuba, and was trying to correct it. And we couldn't have that. Venezuela was the same goddamn thing. Hugo Chavez wasn't so anti-U.S. He was anti what the policies were that allowed the corporations to take over in Venezuela and steal all the oil from the people. So a lot of this stuff, as you pointed out, is the U.S. making serious errors in what we're doing. And things like Cuba and Venezuela, we only have us to blame, which is the Iran-Contra bullshit. That's we're now reaping the rewards of that in the migrations coming up from Central America.
Yeah, it's all of our making.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But try and convince a Trump-tard of the connections there, and you may as well be teaching a rock how to swim.
I don't think it's necessarily fair to limit that to Republicans or maggots. I mean, that we've been bipartisanly stupid about Cuba for a very long time.
Well, it goes, in my recollections, it goes back to John Foster Dulles and Eisenhower.
Oh, the dear Dulles brothers. God, their dead hands are still screwing America. Well, it's not so much their hands, but yeah.
Anyhow, that's my contribution for a while.
Okay. Well, let's look around the room a little bit. And oh God, I saw a story earlier today. It's hardly worth the effort. But the fragility of these maggot ass. So it's a Sean Hannity job story. During the first week of the NFL season that starts in September, every NFL game is going to feature a song at the beginning of the game called "Lift
every voice and sing. It has been referred to as the Black National Anthem. And by God, Sean, it's something up with which Sean Hannity is not going to put. Because it was sung in front of the U.S. Capitol on the 4th of July by the invitation of PBS. And the NFL is just trying to correct some of its public relations nightmare. Of course, they could probably alleviate a lot of that if they would insist that maybe Colin Kaepernick be given a shot. Because, you know, he's still blacklisted. But last night he went on the air, Hannity job did, and threw a fit and said, this is a really bad idea. They've turned off fans with the politicization of sports. People kind of like to go to games because it's a distraction from everyday life. And now, of course, the social justice warriors will ruin it. Good God.
Seems like they sang that song a lot about before football games last year. I think seems like they did in the Super Bowl.
Did they? And somehow or another, they managed to continue playing the game. There's nothing wrong with our flag, our great anthem, Hannity. It doesn't need to be redesigned in any way. It's the greatest country God gave man, and we don't need to be ashamed all the time or apologizing all the time. And, of course, Emery and Marvelline are sitting there on the matching Barca lounge going, you tell him, Sean, you tell him. I mean, and this will really make his head explode. The NFL and the NFL Players Association, which, of course, is a member of the AFL-CIO, are thinking about putting the names of people who were victims of police brutality on patches on jerseys, maybe on helmets, maybe on uniforms, because they're trying to separate themselves from the from the assholes. And I don't know, maybe along the way make people forget that, you know, Colin Kaepernick is still blacklisted.
Yeah. They had messages on the back of their helmets last year. There's a little plastic piece on by the neck.
Yeah.
And they had messages right there.
Well, apparently those were individual team decisions. And now they're looking to make it league-wide. God, it must, you know, can you imagine what it must be like to have to live in your own head as Sean Hannity and just look for racist shit to piss and moan about every day when you're living in nothing but white privilege all day, every day, 24/7, 365? God damn. Oh, and
well, when I heard about, oh.
Yeah, go, Tracy.
No, I'm just saying when I heard it, because I heard it this morning, and it just, if you've ever heard the song, it doesn't matter how many times I've heard the song or sung the song, it moves me to tears every time I hear. Because especially, because it's just about what Black people have been dealing with ever since before the song was written and still today.
Sure.
But it's so uplifting. And it really, if you listen to the words, it's all about, you know, rising above no matter what. And that, you know, no matter how horribly Black people are treated, we love this country. We are patriots. You know, but it's like, it doesn't matter what anybody said, you know, if I'm not a white man, then I'm not a patriot. And just because I love this country does not mean I can't criticize it. But if you ever get a chance to hear, you know, listen to the verses and actually really listen to the all, I think there's three maybe four verses in the song. And it just, like I said, every time I hear it, I lose it. It's just, I don't know. I mean, and I think anybody that has any semblance of humanity, they couldn't, anybody that has any, you know, semblance of humanity could not listen to that song and not be moved. The Far Cry Band of fucking Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, there's, well, you know, the Star Spangled Banner does. You know, I'm guessing Lift Every Voice and Sing doesn't have anything about lynching anybody in it.
No.
Mm-mm. Well, you know, it's not American if it ain't got a. It ain't truly American if it ain't got a verse in it about lynchings.
Lynching, right? You know, I mean, I'm trying to think. Whose version? Well, I know Paul Robeson sang it, and I believe Mahalia Jackson sang it too. But I don't know any. I know there has to be recorded versions, because usually when you hear it, when they play it or sing it, they only sang the first verse, and it wasn't until years later that I heard the whole song all the way through. But yeah, that song, it just, like, you know, like you said, it's the well, when it was first written, of course, it was called the Negro National Anthem.
And you said Mahalia Jackson, so it's been around a while.
Right. Oh yeah, it was written, let me see, I believe, yes. Let's see. For lyrics, Lift Every Voice and Sing, James Weldon Johnson. 1900. The lyrics were written in 1900, and the music was in 1905.
So the Hannity job is literally throwing a fit about something that is 116 years old.
Yeah. So it's like, so, and I'm not going to sing because I don't want the audience to go screaming into the night. But the first is Lift Every Voice and Sing, Till Earth and Heaven Ring, Ring with the Harmonies of Liberty, Let Our Rejoicing Rise, High as the Listening Skies, let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed. We have come over a way that with tears have been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered. From the gloomy past till now, we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far on the way, thou who has by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray. Lest our feet stray from the places of our God where we meet thee. Lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forgot thee. Shadow beneath thy hand, may we forever stand. True to our God, true to our native land.
Wait, so this pasty-faced, doughy little prick, the Hannity job.
Yeah, that part.
Is throwing a fit about a hymn. That's a hymn.
It's a hymn. That's a hymn.
That's a hymn of praise to, didn't it say Almighty God? Isn't that in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Several times.
Hey, Robin?
Yeah.
I posted a YouTube link to when Alicia Keys did it from the NFL. Yeah, last year on September 13th.
Wow. Okay.
I knew I'd heard it. She does it, and I remember.
Oh, and I'm sure it's breathtaking.
I just forgot who sang it.
Well, I just found
and there's a hell of a long, and there's a hell of a long advertisement at the beginning of it.
Really? Well, I just found the history of it. The two guys, and yeah, I got to be careful. The two guys who wrote it were brothers.
Yep.
Yeah, James Weldon Johnson and John Rosamond Johnson. And they wrote it, and it became the anthem of the NAACP, I think.
They wrote it for the anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's birthday in 1905.
Yeah. How much more
patriotic can you get? Come on now.
Yeah, right. God. But then again,
Tracy,
this is
Robin Hood.
This is the guy who begins his, as far as I know, I pointed this out before, this is the Hannity job, who begins his radio show with a country song called Let Freedom Ring that's about a woman who kills her abuser. No lie.
Oh,
I think she burns the house down around him or something, and then the chorus, Let Freedom Ring! Singing! Sorry, bad. Hey, that reminds me. I was talking to Tracy earlier today, and this is either a selling point or an oh my god point. If we get the horn in together, one of the things will be a karaoke party, DJ dance party, and yeah, I will. I'll sing, and everybody can video it and have that as a memento of the horror. The horror. Yeah. So.
That won't be singing. It will be words coming out of your mouth to some sort of tune.
Hey, come on. You don't know. You haven't heard.
True. But I want to
somewhere in the known universe, there's a key that I can stay in.
The key of Robin. The key of R. But I wanted to say something really quick about Hannity. You know, Hannity, he doesn't know the words. He hasn't heard the song that Tracy just read. In the same way, Robin and Tracy, these are the people who think that Born in the USA is a patriotic song, because all they hear is Born
True.
In the USA.
Unfortunately,
I remember the first time I remember the first time I actually listened to the words and read the words. I was like, oh, shit, this is, like, extremely critical of the United States. This is not a patriot. I mean, you know, it's not a New Jersey version of God Bless the USA.
Don't forget Rockin' in the Free World. They thought that was an anthem for freedom, too.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Fucking Trump used that.
Oh, and hey, Jeremy, thank you for knocking out Joey and Giraffe's challenge specifically. Thank you very kindly. That means we still got $45 to go on Darlene's Darlene's challenge, and then
how much do you need for Darlene's challenge? I'm sorry, Robert.
$45.
Well, go ahead. You got it covered.
Well, thank you. That's okay. So we have we've knocked down 220 of 575. So 375. We're down to 355 to finish the week, and that's amazing.
Can I ask a question?
You can ask anything. You can ask anything you want to. It's a regular joint.
Yeah, what I was going to say. Whatever. Am I the only one whose mother and father taught them that if you can't say something nice, don't say anything?
Exactly right, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thumper rule from Bambi.
Or
Thumper, what have I told you? If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all.
No, I like, if you can't say anything nice, just come sit next to me.
Do we know where that's from?
Yes, Steel Magnolias.
Steel Magnolias. Who said it?
Olympia, the late great Olympia Dukakis.
Yeah. What was her name?
Oh, what was her name?
Oh, shit. See, now I can see.
What is this, machine gun trivia?
What the hell was her...
What was her name? Oh, I can't think of her name, but... I guess we could Google that shit.
Yeah, but I was about to say, this is proof that we are of an older generation because we actually try to dig it out of our own memories instead of just cheating and running off to Dr. Google.
Oh, I got it. Can I get... I had an old man moment the other day.
The horror.
I went to McDonald's, and I haven't eaten a hamburger there in 15 years, so it wasn't to get a hamburger. At least 15 years. And I ordered a soda or something. I don't remember what it was. And whatever the price it was, something came out to such and such price, and I'm watching this young girl count out change, and I'm looking at this, and she hands me change, and I look at it, and it's not even close to what the, it's not even like 3 cents, it was like 35 cents off. And I said to her, I said, you know, you're not even close. And then it occurred to me, 9 people out of 10 see her counting, and or what looks to be counting, and they just take it and think that she's right. Mm. And I said, you owe me, you know, such and such. And she gives me additional change, and I gave, like, you know, 8 pennies back to her. I said, you gave me too much. And I had that... You know, these kids can't even do simple arithmetic.
If the computer doesn't give her the answer, it's not going to happen.
Well, I don't even think she could count it because the computer did give her the answer. You want to tell you something? When I was in high school...
Say it like that, Steve. When I was in high school...
Back in the aughts, when I was in high school... We weren't in no math class. I don't care all the way from algebra to algebra 2 to trigonometry to pre-calculus, or they called it analysis at my school. We were never allowed to use calculators for anything.
Did you use a slide rule?
No, you didn't use any of that.
I got taught to use a slide rule in chemistry.
We were allowed to use calculators on only SATs.
Not us.
Yo, no.
Well,
because you know what? To be honest with you, that's why I'm actually very, very good at arithmetic and times tables and adding big numbers in my head because of that.
It sounds like to me that McDonald's needs to hire the count for a training video.
No, it's just
that person's drawer was probably off by dollars and dollars and dollars at shift end.
I know it. Well, here's the deal: cash registers don't have numbers on them anymore. They have the. It's not. Oh, a hamburger's, you know, 239. They don't have 239. It's got. You press the button. It says hamburger, or even
it's an emoji,
a picture, or has a picture of a hamburger.
Oh. Emoji cash register?
I don't have any idea. All I know is that she couldn't, and I felt...
We've all seen Idiocracy, right?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Carl's Jr.
Well, it's time, Steve. It's time to see Idiocracy. I mean, when I think about the shit that we gave to Scott over the Big Lebowski, and you haven't seen Idiocracy? Oh, physician, heal thyself.
But the Big Lebowski is the greatest movie ever made. I mean, it's like seeing Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is the worst movie ever made.
You haven't seen Idiocracy, so you don't understand what it is to be the greatest documentary ever made that is masquerading as a science fiction movie.
I did see the President's State of the Union address when they wore the Apollo Creed outfit from Rocky II.
Yeah.
I did see that.
There's a scene in Idiocracy where somebody at the hospital looks down at a cash register and it's all
glyphs. It's all emojis. And, like, the pregnant lady is a line drawing of a woman with a baby falling out. You got to watch it, Steve. This is mandatory viewing. Then again, Dave number 11 says, the last time I had a youngin' sell me a coffee, she refused a Kennedy half dollar because it wasn't real money.
That's awesome.
Don't even try the Sacagawea dollar, Dave. Just don't. Save yourself the heartache.
Can I go back to the black, I don't want to call it the Star Spangled Banner, but the national anthem?
Yeah, the so-called black national anthem.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to be taking bets in Vegas on whether Jerry Jones or that fuckstick owner of Washington, Dan Snyder, are going to stand up for that when they sing it on opening day.
Or maybe Neil.
Yeah, maybe they will. Now that would be something.
Oh, God.
All the teams did play it last year on opening day.
Okay.
So they're just going to do it again this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otto DeShot just took us, started us on what's after the after all the challenges are done. So that's huge. Thank you, Otto. Let's see. What does that do to? I said 220. So we're down to 345. 345 to finish the week. Thank you, Otto. Thank you very kindly. I had a note from Brendan who said, Robin, if you karaoke during meals, it'll reduce food requirements during the horn in and cut down on your cooking. Thanks. Thanks for your vote of confidence, Brendan. But Tracy, didn't you start looking at airfares? Tracy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm echoing. Yes, I did. And as soon as I get into where I'm going, but yeah, I found round trip for like under 500.
Wow.
Actually, for that's flying into Yeager.
Yeah, that's Charleston, CRW. So from LA, that ain't shabby.
No.
I'm still not convinced a parachute will be involved.
Shut up, Jeremy. But look, here's the thing. You know, during the free time, because the weather's going to be nice, we've got one of the adventures around here. We've got a professional pilot who has a 1943 Boeing Stearman biplane, and you can go up. And he will do aerobatics with you if you're feeling bold and brave. Toward the end of his life, my nonagenarian uncle, who had been a World War II fighter ace in the Navy, went up because that's what he started flying in. But Ferg's done it a couple of times, just loves it. But, he'll do the hammerheads and the stalls and do it right over the gorge. So if you're into thrills like that, that's a possibility.
Robin, when I was there, we went up in a biplane like that. I mean, that guy has to be long gone. This is 25 years ago.
Oh yeah, that was $5 Charlie.
$5 Charlie, that's right. And he had that museum in the shed or his man cave or whatever, and there was some like statuettes of people. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah. That little museum.
Well, now the guy who is
$5 Charlie.
Yeah, the guy who's doing it now, he's got a real nice runway there, just off to one side of the local Wally World, and he's got a real pretty hangar, and the bubbly little blue and gold paint job on the because it's a biplane. You know, it's not a single wing plane, and. You know that the sound of that rotary engine. He goes all over up here.
And
that sounds great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I personally have not partaken because I don't find the idea of being in an aircraft and having the engine stall and then just start falling. That's not my idea of a good time. Because I got the kind of luck where the engine don't come back on.
I can't imagine that prices would be too different from Portland to Charleston, from LA, from Tracy, where Tracy's flying out of. So that sounds really reasonable. What airline is that, Tracy? Hello?
Oh, sorry. American Airlines.
American.
Oh, so did it send you through Chicago?
Charlotte.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that CLT?
Yeah, that's CLT. That's
so
not.
What I did was I went onto Kayak. So here's what you do. Go onto Kayak and put in the dates that you want to fly and have them do a reminder. They'll send you notices if the fares are going up or down. And right now I got an email the other day that the fares are still holding steady.
Oh, okay, good. Thanks, Tracy. Kayak, huh? I've never used that.
And I would love to be able to do it later. I don't mean do the actual event later. The date is perfect, but like I've said before, I promise this weekend I will get it done. I'll get a post put up at GoFundBob.com. That's just the easy link to the GoFundMe page. I'll get it put up there. And just lay out the particulars, all the eats, all the fun. But if we're going to do it, we won't be able to do it if I don't book, like, by the end of August. Because this place is going. I had to run over across the river today. And I got past, let's see, Washington State, California, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Kentucky, and South Carolina before I saw another car from West Virginia pass me.
Oh my God.
And having lived here for 22 years, that is still a little bit surprising. You know, the Smithsonian listing of Fayetteville as the second coolest small town in America, and the fact that this is the brand new national park, this place is about to go sky high. And so if we can get, like I said, there's going to be enough for 50 people. And because, you know, I can feed 50 people easily. If we get that all pulled together, then I can get everything booked by the end of August and we'll be ready to go. And I want to see everybody. I there's so many people I haven't met that I so badly want to meet. Now I've met Brother Deacon Asa in the past, but I can't wait to see him again. Never met Tracy. I'm just dying to do that. And you know, you, Chris, anybody and everybody, because we've been talking together, you know, like a little family for almost two decades. And you know, I want to argue with Steve in person. And one of the things that I'm most looking forward to. Can you imagine a Friday on the front porch with John Bridivo and me and Malloy and the Horn community just sharing a microphone? Can you imagine what a blast that would be? My God, that'd be insane.
Yeah.
Or I'd have people throwing shit at me.
Oh no, people love you. Now quit it.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and you know, we can all marvel. We can all marvel at Wanda the Honda, because Darlene will be.
That has to be a cowbell.
Yeah.
That has to be a cowbell. People will be throwing stuff at me. Come on.
No, I don't agree. Okay.
But you know, Darlene coming on down in Wanda the Honda, and it, you know, it, what a blast!
With her mullet. Don't forget that.
Now, leave the mullet alone. She doesn't have the mullet anymore. Stop with the mullet.
She has a year to grow it out.
Oh, wait. Darlene, you're getting requests now. They want the mullet back.
I told Darlene today that I am turning into less and less of a Democrat with small D. I don't know what I am, but I am becoming increasingly of the opinion that people that the average person, whatever that is not capable of self-governance beyond the decisions they make in their life of, you know, where to live, what spaghetti sauce to buy, and that type of thing.
Yeah, but I'm going to push back on that, Steve. Because I
expected nothing less.
Well, I mean, for once, I'm not the little ray of sunshine. I think that's by design. I think there are examples of people who participate in democracy, and they take the idea of democracy very seriously, and they take their duties there within very seriously. Ooh, that's a lawyery word, there within.
My problem, Steve, is the alternative to me ultimately devolves into an Ayn Randian dystopia, and that's...
I still maintain I want my constitutional monarchy.
Oh, I want a dinosaur to ride down the mountain too. I mean,
Jesus has to ride it.
Wait a second now. Nobody ever had a dinosaur to ride down a mountain. Jeebus never rode a dinosaur. However,
hey, you don't know that
constitutional monarchies. Okay.
That's what they taught me in Sunday school.
You know, I want to talk. I took a real issue with you. I think you said something the other night was 300 million years old. The
gorge.
Which is impossible because everyone knows
that the Earth is only 7,000
years.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Because Bishop Pusey's Dick of the Anglican Church figured that out in the middle of the 19th century or something. Is that what? Yeah.
And unbelievably strange that a lot of, and I'm not Mr. Catholic here. I'm just, you know, it's just the truth. A lot of like cosmological discoveries and theories came from like Jesuits and monks. I don't know why. Like the notion of the Big Bang came from a Swiss Jesuit priest. Am I wrong about that?
I don't remember that. I don't know. I'm trying to think back to my days in the Chicago Edler Planetarium.
There was a sort of an ebb and flow to the technological interest of the church, because on the one hand, yeah, you've got some monks discovering things. I think Carolus Linnaeus was a monk, wasn't he? Or no, Gregor Mendel. But on the other hand, you know, you've got what they did to Galileo. Hey, we've got somebody over on the stress line. Let's bring Nidia into this. Hey, Nidia.
Hi there, and I'm so glad to join you all. I've been reluctant to call on Friday on the front porch. I'm not normally a shy person, but for some reason, there's something about this forum that does it to me, but I couldn't resist calling in tonight since you were talking about Cuba.
Okay.
So I wanted to share a personal experience that changed the conversation a little bit. And, you know, I'm reflecting my age as some other callers and listeners. I'm 68, so I want to keep, you know, you to keep in mind my experience in Cuba happened during the Carter administration. So that's how long ago. I was just trying to figure it out. Must have been, I don't know, 78, maybe? Would that be right?
That's Carter.
But anyway.
Yes.
Okay. What I want to tell you all is I was in Cuba. And I went on a healthcare tour. I've worked in the healthcare field for most of my life and been very interested in the Cuban approach to healthcare. And so I just want to share with you all a little bit about what I observed and some of which I believe is still true today. And it goes like this. The first thing is because of the Cuban people having to be very vigilant in resisting being attacked by the United States. One of the benefits of that was they can mobilize their people very quickly, and because they have to for self-defense. So where we saw that demonstrated in healthcare is when they need to vaccinate their people, at least then. I don't know what's happening now. I know what the U.S. news media is saying, but it conflicts with what my knowledge is about them. And so maybe I don't have all the facts, but they could vaccinate their people within 2 days. And I'm not trying to sanitize the Castro regime, but there were some very significant contributions in improving the life of people. And one of the biggest things that we saw, and I think it's been validated, is improvement in child nutrition. Amazing things happened. And so you were not at least back during the time I was there. And if there are shortages now, I think we know the embargo has a lot to do with it.
Also, literacy skyrocketed.
Absolutely. That is so true. And so, again, I'm not trying to sanitize it, but I will tell you, while I was there, I got sick, as did everybody on the trip. I don't know if it has to do with you're not used to the water, it's different there and so forth. So I got sick, and I actually had to be treated. And I don't know what they did to me. They put some shot in my butt, and I got a lot better. But here's the thing that really amazed me about it. And I still see these contradictions. On the one hand, they were so good at providing healthcare services to their people with what they had. And let me clarify that, with what they had, because of the embargo. So one of the things that happened was they became very proficient at using herbals because those were readily available, not patented by the United States and blockades and so forth. So that's one thing. The other thing I saw and have, as I follow them through the years, not that closely, but they are renowned throughout the world for training doctors. And in fact, would send doctors to countries that had healthcare shortages. And I believe that is still the case. You all can disagree with me. We can research it. I don't know, but they were very well renowned for that, and these were very capable doctors. But more recently, I think it was 2015, which really got my attention, was they developed treatments, effective treatments for lung cancer. And when a U.S. company wanted to bring it into the United States, guess what? No, can't have that. It's Cuban. And I know you can pull that up on the internet and see that, in fact, there are a lot of opportunities with this. Now, of course, the great irony is what was one of their major cash crops? Tobacco. And the other one was sugar. And this gets back to what you were saying the other night, Robin, about when you have an economy that is so dependent on a couple of cash crops, I mean, that's obviously extremely risky. But for all their faults, and I understand there may be many, I have to tell you for that there's a period of time I was there, and I've had other friends that had been there. I had friends going way back to the Venceremos Brigade. Some of you may remember that. But even more recently, I have a friend who works at the West Virginia, Robin, legislature, who was there just only a couple of years ago, and he was highly impressed as well. So, yeah, they have their faults, perhaps. Well, obviously, you know, they have their issues. And, you know, we could debate about whether or not, you know, Castro should have left office way before and there should have been elections and all of that stuff. But on the whole, in terms of the average working person, there was a qualitative improvement in their lives. And I just normally I will not call on Friday on the front porch, but since you were talking about Cuba, I had such an amazing experience there. I just felt like I almost owed it to the Cubans. Because, you know, when you've been exposed to that as a U.S. citizen, I need to share that with people here. They're not the enemy. I mean, no. They're some of the most wonderful, warm people, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out to y'all.
I'm glad you did that, Nidia, because among other things, you know, there's another West Virginian with significant experience in Cuba, and that's our good friend Ed Rabel.
I'd love to hear what Ed has to say.
The Emmy Award-winning journalist worked for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worked for all the big three, but he worked for a long time with CBS and spent a considerable amount of time in Cuba and became very well familiar with the Cuban people. And I think he even learned to speak Cuban Spanish. He's been on this program a couple of times, way back when Obama initiated the tepid rapprochement that we had. We talked about it at some length, and you know, and the risks that Cuba would face by opening up. I mean, like I said earlier, that literacy rate would go through the floor. And so so would the infant mortality rate and the maternal mortality rate.
That's right. Exactly. That is so right. So we can listen to this. The U.S. press, all I'm hearing now is, you know, denigrating them with no, and maybe I'm just not listening to the right news reports, with no recognition of the things they've had to overcome. I'm just not, it's not coming through in the U.S. news media. It's disturbing to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like some sort of Cuban Tourette's or something, that it doesn't matter who the media outlet are in this country. You might get a little liberalism here and there, but by God, all you have to do is say CUBA, and they're in the middle of a hissy. But I like to ask hard questions. You know that, Nydia. And so the question becomes one of, by God, they were repressive. You know, they executed dissidents. When you're trying to build a government and people are attacking the government, what do you do with the people who attack the government?
Well, exactly. Of course. Maybe there were excesses. I don't know. But given what they were up against, it's unbelievable they survived.
Well, I think we're about to learn a little hard lesson, Nydia. And that is, when people attack the seat of your government and you give them 40 hours of community service,
they're probably
going to do it again.
Yeah. How about that? The other thing I just don't understand, we have relationships with Russia, former Soviet Union. Granted, it's a different animal today. We have relationships with China, with Vietnam, and so forth. What is the deal about Cuba?
It's the cranky, irascible, hateful Cubano population of South Florida. I'm not trying to be some sort of asshole about it, Nydia, but when you see someone wielding outsized political power, you kind of got to ask why, don't you?
Yeah.
And so we've been
What do you all think?
Both parties have been bowing and scraping to them since 1960.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is it too much to say that population basically swings presidential elections?
In Florida, it damn sure does. And Florida can swing, and Florida can swing a nation.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm so old I remember 2000, hanging chads.
It does seem to be that's the case. I don't know this for a fact. I'd like the response of the Horn community. I have to think there's some racism here as well. When I was in Cuba, the majority of people I met were black and brown people. You know, there's some lighter skinned people, but the whole approach to race and racism, and again, I don't know the latest, is very different. But at least what I observe, much more enlightened than anything going on here. So to what degree, I don't know. But you got to wonder.
Well, I think you do. And since, let me just shift gears on you for a minute, Nydia. Since it's not every day that I have a West Virginian on the front porch alongside me. Our friend Khalil sent me a story today that sent me in turn out into the yard to eat dirt and run rabbits. And it comes out of all places, Texas, because our senior senator, ostensibly a Democrat,
oh,
Nydia.
No.
Yeah, all I had to do
oh,
is,
no.
Oh, oh no, oh no. That's, and I haven't even said the word mansion yet. Go ahead, say oh no again, Nidia.
We know. Oh no. Mm.
He is going to Texas.
I mean, every time I see, oh my God. Well,
wait,
I gotta tell you,
I'm gonna make it so much worse.
Go on.
Let's just go ahead and ruin. Have you had dinner already? I'll feel much better if you already have.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard today's news because I was out there in lovely Clay County today. I just got home from work, turned you on, so I've missed this. What?
He's going to Texas. Now, yesterday, he met with the Texas State House of Representative Democrats on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
He headed for Texas today, and I was reminded of the words of the late, great David Crockett, who said, "You all may go to hell, I am going to Texas." Well, apparently Joe Manchin knows more history than I give him credit for, because he went to Texas, too, because so many Democrats in West Virginia are telling him to go to hell. No, he took off for Texas.
Oh, God.
Because after meeting with the Texas House Democrats on Capitol Hill yesterday, he has bolted for the Lone Star State, where the advertisement said, "We invite you to join us for a special evening supporting our friend, U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, a longtime friend since his days as governor of West Virginia." Well, that went out under the letterhead, Nidia, and everybody else who wants to go ahead. The screaming can begin any time now. That went out as a solicitation to a host committee that is comprised mostly of Republicans.
I knew you were going there. Well, what else could it be? If all the Democrats left the Texas legislature, who else would be inviting him to come in? This is really the height of, what do you even call this? It is such a betrayal. It is such a betrayal. And I remember Joe Manchin, as I'm sure you do, Bob. I've been in West Virginia since 89. And I used to have reason during the early 90s to go to the legislature. And I can remember him when he was in the state senate. And even then, it was back then, it was all this rhetoric about what we got to do is get everybody around the table. He's still saying that.
Yeah.
Get everybody around the table, but he's completely oblivious to what the external conditions are. Is it? Well, it's worse than that. We know it's worse than that. This man has an ego the size of Blair Mountain, you know, and I don't right now know anybody, Bob, and I, you know, have a small circle of, you know,
I know.
But I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody who's particularly thrilled with him right now. Do you?
Not who calls
it. For your out-of-state callers, but I want you all to know we don't like him either.
Amen. Wait a second. Cowbell for that, Nidia. Our Texas contingent may recognize some of the names on the letter inviting people to come and swan around with Joe Manchin. Jim Teague, Randy Fowler, Brooke Brookshire, Steve Keen, Bill White, Rich Kinder, J.D. Slaughter, Ryan Lance, Alan Armstrong, Harry Pefanis, Willie Chang, Lane Riggs, Will Van Lowe, Jeff Hildebrand, Joseph Gorder, Vicky Holub, Mike Hennigan, Clark Smith, and that Jeff Hildebrand that I mentioned, he's the co-founder of a company called Hill Corp. And that's a massive carbon polluter outfit. And there's an energy infrastructure called Kinder Morgan that was founded by Richard Kinder. And Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, who used to wear the smart glasses that didn't help, he put Hildebrand on the University of Texas Board of Regents back in 2013. So it's probably happening even as we speak at the River Oaks area of Houston, which is one of the richest neighborhoods in all of Texas. And get this, you can kind of tell how Joe's going to vote on any climate legislation that comes into the Senate.
Natural Resources Committee, and I'm not going to just beat that dead horse some more because I'm still pissed at a couple of people. $5,800 gets you in the door, and $5,000 to his leadership pack, and they're expecting over 150 people to show up. And of course, it's happening right now. They're swanning around.
Oh my God.
And having a beer with Joe, and he's talking to him about bipartisanship. And since it's a bunch of fucking oil billionaires, pardon my filthy mouth, you know that they're talking about, because we've already heard the tapes, and maybe somebody will be walking around with a recording in there, recording device. But we've already heard, you know, he's going to stop anything that comes into Senate Natural Resources and make sure that this country continues to do everything it possibly can to boil humanity alive on this little blue-green marble. And pardon me if it pisses me off. Go, Nidia.
Can I say something real quick?
Oh, go ahead.
All I wanted to say is I didn't get to read this morning's paper yet. It's sitting in the car. I need to get it out. Has the Gazette covered this yet?
I didn't check the Gazette. This came from the Texas Tribune.
Okay. I just want your listeners to know who think we're all like right-wing Republicans down here.
Oh, the Horn family doesn't think that, but nonetheless.
Well, I know a lot of out-of-state people think that, you know, there's no progressive community here. Yes, there is. And the Charleston Gazette, even though it's not as good as it used to be, still, it is pretty much a progressive paper, and they're going to be slamming him all over the place for this, don't you think?
I hope so. God knows he needs it. Maybe if I pull aside a little time to be an ink-stained wretch back here, maybe I'll bang out a... an op-ed and ship it off to the Gazette, but I don't know if they'll print it. There's been some changes there.
Well, they printed you before.
Yeah, but management changed.
This gets back to, though, you know, what's our alternative? And you've so eloquently pointed out before, it's going to have to be electing more Democrats to the Senate from other states. Because when we've had people run against him, I remember asking you, I won't name the woman's name, and I don't mean about Charlotte Britt. That's the whole governor's thing. But the woman who ran against him in the primary for Senate didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. So what are we going to do?
All you can do is make him irrelevant. I mean, that's my considered opinion. But there's going to be another fundraising another PAC's going to come in here and fund a primary challenge against him, I'm sure, because he is so thoroughly loathed and despised, people will open their wallets and give till it hurts, and the PAC will do what they did the last time. They will pay some to the candidate here. It's perfectly legal. There's nothing wrong with it. But they'll pay some to the candidate here, but they'll take most of the money and they'll put it out of state on other candidates that they prefer elsewhere. And that's what I find so freaking odious about all of this. Nidia, while I do have you for just a second, I was talking about the Horn-In earlier, and I need the testimony of an actual, real, live, no kidding, honest to God West Virginian. Is Fayetteville a fabulous place to spend a weekend?
Oh my God, guys, it's heaven. Now, the place I tend to go when I'm in that area is I go to Hawk's Nest, which you can explain to them what that is. I always stay at the lodge there, and I walk the trails there because I know those trails very well. But I then also go, of course, to the Gorge Trails, and there's so many of them. In fact, there's a book called something. I thought it's here on my shelf somewhere. It's all about just all the trails in that area, and there's so much to discover. It is so breathtaking. Let me put it like this, and then I'm going to jump off the phone because I'm not that comfortable staying on for a long time. But here's what I want people to know. I work as a mental health therapist, and so when I say this, maybe it has a little bit of meaning for you. But when I go to that area, I am telling you, I change personality. It is like this
calm and contentment and being at one. I know this sounds corny, but I really mean it. Being at one with the earth comes over me. And on top of that, and I know we've talked a little bit about this in the past, the Hawksnest area has particular meaning because of what happened with that tunnel. And when I walk those areas, I truly feel I am on sacred ground, and I'm very humbled, and I am very aware of what that has meant for labor history and for the movements that have worked to protect people from horrible industrial illnesses. And then you overlay that with what happened to African Americans who were specifically recruited to dig in that tunnel, pure silica dust, which killed people so rapidly, while they were told, you have tunnelitis, just take this pill, nothing short of murder. And so the area is truly sacred. And I am telling you, to me, there is no more, and I'm sure there are many places with equal meaning on this earth, but in this region, for me, that is it. And to my dying day, it's going to be my favorite place to go. I hope that convinces people to come.
That was well put, Nydia, and I appreciate it so much. You know, just last Saturday, and I know you know the trail I'm talking about, I took the Mill Creek Trail down from Anstead all the way down to the gorge. And
that's one of my favorites.
And then hiked it back up. And what I didn't know it, but you can rent stand-up paddle boards down there. And
I've seen people do that. I've never done that, but I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
It looks like a lot of fun. I've never done it either, but I'm thinking about it. And of course,
we have the whitewater rafting and the rock climbing and all the trails and the food.
But yeah, you talk about
Fayetteville. It's wonderful.
Absolutely, and by then I'm hoping maybe Secret Sandwich Society will be back up and running that by then. And yeah, you talk about the trails.
Absolutely.
There's 1,600 miles.
Mm-hmm. Is it that much? I didn't realize
or 1,600 trails or some crazy number, and it's all wrapped up with history and culture and.
Well, you'll see the old mining equipment and the thing. There's these crazy places like, Robin, are you familiar with Seldom Seen? Have you been there?
No.
Yeah, one of those will take you on the trails, will take you. So it's called the Seldom Seen. And it was a little mining town in the gorge area. And it was called that because to get there, it's so remote. You were seldom seen.
I'll be damned.
No lie. Yeah. I'm going to jump off.
Nydia, thank you so much for jumping in. That was wonderfully helpful. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great evening and a great weekend, Nydia. Thank you. Nydia is just wonderful. And everything, that was from the heart. And I knew she'd be fantastic about it because I know how much she loves this area. And Hawk's Nest is on this side of the river. It's about 3 miles from where I am right now. And then Fayetteville's on the other side of the river. I like to think of this as the wrong side of the river. But, this Joe Manchin story that Khalil sent along, was, God damn it, really? I mean, he's got no shame at this point. One of the lone Democrats that will be there is the guy who ran as the Democratic nominee for governor of Texas in, I think, 2010. Anybody still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. I wanted to say, Robin, just to comment on those Texan fucking maggots. Weren't all those people the ones who were supposed to leave the light on for you during the Texas ice storm?
Yeah, no, not so much. They're not too good at that shit.
Nope.
And, of course, I'm sure Joe will say, Joe will go down there and tell him, see, I understand you had some power problems down here, and that's because you closed down all your coal-fired power plants, and you're not buying good West Virginia coal to burn down here to make sure people don't freeze to death in the winter. And if you know, I'm a coal broker, and if you'd only bought some coal from me, maybe then people wouldn't have froze to death.
Hey, Robin, I'm not kidding when I tell you this, but they sell some of those stand-up paddleboards now with a built-in cooler. So if you get good and tired and thirsty, you can drink back some of those calories you've worked off.
Oh, of course they do. And nothing says good time like taking a 12-pack of PBRs out on the river or the lake and getting sideways and falling in and, you know, right. Yeah.
America.
America. Hot damn. Yeah. But, you know, you're...
Just don't fall out of the boat on the galley. Just don't do that.
No, you don't want to do that. And depending on what the weather conditions are, the new is not nearly as ferocious as the galley is. And but it's still a hell of a challenge. And now, Chris, they run the galley season long if the water's up enough. I mean, we've had enough rain that Somersville Lake is way up. And so they've been doing releases, and the buses have been running out the road here, taking people to do the galley. And that's the galley is one of the most ferocious rivers on the east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, and just watching that dam when they do release that water, it's unreal. Just that rush of water, it's insane.
Yeah, it's a crazy number of gallons per minute. I mean, like millions or something. And you know, one of the nice things about this part of Appalachia is that we are so well watered, and so that's what makes it all the more infuriating that we so cavalierly poison it and ruin it. Yeah. And the galley is, thus far, the galley and the new are reasonably clean.
They are?
Yeah, they are. Because you don't want to go poisoning national rivers. You know, government doesn't take too kindly to that. But there's all kinds of outfitters, and you know, you can learn. They'll go and teach you to climb rocks or boulders, and you know, depending on what kind of a hiker you are, the Endless Wall Trail is only about maybe less than 4 miles. But it will put a challenge on you because you're winding your way up the mountain, and then the next thing you know, you're staring out over 900 feet of air, and it's not like there's railings or anything. It's breathtaking, truly. Other trails are a lot easier.
Maybe by next June 2nd, cannabis will be completely legal everywhere.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? We're still, yes. Like I said, I signed up for my card the other day, but the dispensaries aren't even open yet.
What the hell's going on?
Well, the Baptists. The Baptists drag their feet, and, well, we can't figure out how to do the banking stuff. That's why I'd like to see it decriminalized, because in addition to the, you know, the drug laws and taking, you know, cannabis, which is not a narcotic, off the narcotics list, taking it off thou shalt not use any money to be able to put money in the bank, and doing that on a federal level would make life immensely simpler for everybody. And but hopefully the dispensaries will open soon, because they're at least opening up the applications for the cards. But no shit, I have to go to like CVS and get a passport photo done and register with the state. All these idiots, the maggots, the anti-vaxxers, and so forth. I got a story here from The Guardian. Headline, Republican lawmakers push to cast vaccine refusal as a civil rights issue. Bills in several state houses seek to block employers from demanding COVID-19 immunization, even though few do.
Oh, my God.
You know, what happened to we hate government job killing regulations? I mean, shit is getting... Shit's getting real, real bad out there.
Well, I made the mistake again today of reading the comments on my local news channel.
I thought we'd talked about that, Jeremy.
I know. But someone, I'm kidding you not, went from, you know, legalizing to making it where you can order mandate shots to that's just like someone getting an abortion. They made that connection. Not sure how they did it, but they did it.
Maggot math made easy. Oh, God. They're going to kill us. They're trying to kill us. Let's see. There's a Senate bill in South Carolina stand prohibiting employers from firing, demoting, and suspending employees who are unvaccinated. Montana stand has passed a bill last April. Employers are banned from requiring vaccinations. Arizona has pending legislation. On and on and on. God.
Those laws all sound like precedent to ban drug testing in the workplace.
Hey, Robin?
Yes, Parky.
I talked to my sister the other day. She lives in Knoxville.
Yeah.
She's a retired school teacher. First thing I asked her, I said, what the hell is wrong with your state? She says, I can't figure it out either. They're just screwball. But anyway, she said she was, I asked her if she was going to ever substitute again. She says, hell no.
Not no.
She was doing that for a while, but she had, still knows some people teaching. And I guess in Tennessee, they're wide open, no mask, going back to school. And she was telling a friend of hers, you better wear a mask in your classroom.
Yeah, or you'll get all dead. Because the Delta variant, Joe Biden today. And
well, the friend was totally vaccinated, but you can still catch the virus, but you can spread it too.
Right, exactly.
I think.
And other people have pointed out on this program that it seems like Joe Biden's fresh out of fucks to give. So today, he said that social media companies are killing people by letting anti-vax information spread on their platforms.
Oh, that's the new thing, that they're going after Biden for that. Did you see the press conference today?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that Dulce guy? There's a video of Jim Psaki or whatever.
Oh, Jen Psaki? Yeah, oh, you're talking about Psaki, yeah, Ducey, yeah.
Ducey. I mean, it's like every
Ducey
day
Jr.,
she hands
right?
that guy his hat.
And bless her heart, she pushes back and brooks no bullshit, so good on her. I've actually got some audio here from Mark Fiore, and it's so perfect. I wish there was one of those, you know, limousine liberal cruise missile billionaires who would drop enough money to pay Mark Fiore for the rights to run this all over Fox News, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, and the other ones, I don't care, we're enriching them, so what? They're running the information. Just, the animation is funny. It's a talking coronavirus, okay? But the audio will more than do the job.
Hey there, humans. I just want to thank all of you who have been working so hard to keep me around. I love you people, especially you, Tucker Carlson. You and Fox News have reached millions of people with anti-vaccine rants, so now I can reach them too. From anti-masking to anti-vaxxing, you've been on my side through thick and thin. When I was a young virus, I never thought I would live to see the day when people would listen to political pundits instead of their doctor. And thanks to all you Republicans across the country working to fight vaccinations in your state. When you make laws that stick up for people who refuse to get vaccinated, that means you stick up for me. Thanks, fellas. If you loved me last winter, you're really gonna love my new Delta variant. Oh, and thanks to all of you who've mocked Joe Biden's plan of door-to-door vaccinations. I mean, do we really want the government offering something to people that prevents them from dying a horrible death? No, thank you. And most of all, I'd like to thank my old friend who made masks, vaccines, and science partisan, Donald J. Trump. Couldn't have done it without you, buddy. So a big wet COVID thank you to all you anti-vaxxers. I'll be seeing more of you in the ICU.
Perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
His work is just amazing.
And one of the best parts of the animation is this angry old white dude standing on his front stoop. He's got a urine-colored snake flag hanging from his porch. And he's got a Trump flag in his yard and a sign that says, "No thanks, I prefer to drown in my own fluids." It's true. Every word of that animation is true. And, you know, sometimes news channels like CNN, MSNBC, I'd love to see them run this. I think most people who watch MSNBC and CNN don't need the message, but the only thing that piece misses is a great big thank you to Mark Zuckerberg. You know, one of the things that was pointed out today is that the people who are spreading the anti-vax information online and making it so pernicious is a tiny number. It's like 12 people. That's it.
Yeah, Randy was talking about that. There's a 40-page report you could read if you like about those 12 people. Names and the whole works.
And, you know, and because of our fetishized approach to the First Amendment, no, we can't do nothing about them. And then there's Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. And by the way, we got 30 minutes left in the program, and we have $355 to go in fundraising. We're $355 from a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. And it would be great to knock all of that out and be in decent shape going into Moran Monday after the weekend. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. Oh my God. This miserable POS is actually fundraising on the virus. Or I should say, he's fundraising on his shitty response to the virus. He is selling a T-shirt, I kid you not, with an outline of the state of Florida on it. And it says, "Don't Fauci Florida." I wish I was joking. I'm not joking. How ethically dead and morally bankrupt do you have to be to do something like that?
Hey, Robin,
did
you mention the quote about Meghan McCain last night, or was that John?
No, that was John. I didn't get to Meghan, our little nut Meg.
Well, I'll share it real quick. On January 6th, during the insurrection, Jim Schwartz Jordan was standing near her and some of his fellow female representatives and said, "We need to get
you." Oh, wait, you said Meghan McCain. Did you mean?
Yeah, he screwed up.
Yeah, you meant Dick and a Wig Cheney.
Oh, yes, sorry, her, yes. But anyway, he placed his arm on her, so we need to get you ladies out of here. And she looked at him and said, "Get your hands off me, you fucking cause this."
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And who said chivalry's dead?
Well, at least toward the ladies, yeah. Not so much trying to get the boys away from pervy Dr. Dick there at The Ohio State University. Scott joined in. You there, Scott?
Hello. I have to pull the thing out of my pocket so I could unmute.
I don't want to hear about the things you pull out of your pocket. Now quit that.
Oh, no. That's just a banana. Nothing to be alarmed about.
Here we go, Scotty.
You got a banana in your pocket, or you're just happy to see me?
You ruined my joke.
Hey, real quick, a big thank you since we're just in the last half hour of the program. Thank you to Ralphs. We're down to 3:30. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ralphs. Randy Radar said, can we all just move to MySpace? Fuck Zuck. Ooh, we need a Fuck Zuck challenge. That's what we need.
Is MySpace still a thing?
It still exists. Rupert Murdoch bought it and killed it. Maybe he's just holding it back for when we all exit Facebook. But oh God,
MySpace. It's still a ghost town for upstart bands that have no chance of becoming famous, but wish they would.
That's pretty much what it is now, Jeremy. I did want to share this because I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut earlier. I want to come to the Horn End with Wanda the Honda for sure. Not sure about the mullet, but it would be trendy per the first second gentleman's daughter model Ella Emhoff to think I'm trendy 40-something years later. Well, yeah, of course, Darlene. It's like that line from Henry V. Let us be not followers of fashion, but makers of it. Bring it back, Darlene. Bring it back. But
hey, Robin.
Yeah, Scott, back to you.
Back to me. I had to check the lineup to see who was on the call, and she's not on, but I'm sure she'll hear this or I'll drop her a note later. I had misplaced Bernadette's email, and then I got it, and then I dropped her a line, and then she said, watch my mailbox, because she was going to send a sample of Freeze Trees. And it got here yesterday, and I just wanted to thank her for her kindness.
Wonderful. Now, did you put it in your fridge like you're supposed to?
I certainly did. That's the first thing I did.
Good, 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 good. And, you're gonna like it so much.
Well, I used it for the first time last night, or actually right before bedtime, which was in the wee hours of this morning. And it's too soon to tell what it's going to do to my particular issue, but I've done some reading up on these types of remedies, and they apparently work in ways that, you know, over-the-counter stuff doesn't, for all manner of problem. So anyway, I look forward to giving a good report as time goes by.
Oh, I have no doubt you will. I have yet to run across anybody who has tried it who has not been just amazed at it.
Is Steve in Georgia Stan on the call? I didn't look for his name.
No, I've been looking for Steve all evening.
I had a TV, not a TV, but an over, you know, YouTube viewing tip. And I had... And I posted this on my Facebook. Maybe some of the people here who are Facebook friends saw it. But in 2005, there was a documentary film that was in theaters. And I forget now where I saw it. But it was Speak of the Devil.
Skeeve!
You rang.
I conjured him up.
You rang.
I conjured Robin, your ass up.
What's up, man?
Anyway.
Working. What's up, man?
In 2005, there's a documentary film called The American Ruling Class. And when I first saw it, I remember liking it. And then I found it on YouTube the other night and watched it. And I wasn't quite as impressed. And I can't figure out what the gist of the...
What went south?
Huh? Well, I
what
can't...
went south on you?
Well, I think it... as near as I can figure it...
Did you call the guy?
No, I didn't call the guy. I called a guy who knows a guy who knows the guy, and right. They said they're going to call the guy. But I was watching it, and I said, well, you know, what this is basically the establishment, in a rare moment of candor and forthcomingness, telling the truth on themselves. And I wanted to mention it to you so you could watch it, Steve.
Yeah, I will. I wrote it down.
And tell me if I'm seeing straight.
Is it on YouTube or
YouTube? Okay. Yeah, YouTube, and it's called The American Ruling Class, 2005. Ruling. But anyway, it's just a puzzlement. I may have to watch it again tonight, and smear a little Freeze Trees on my remote to make sure the signal is coming in correctly, or clean my eyeglasses with it to see what I'm seeing, because sometimes I don't see straight, you know.
There's a good watch on Peacock called Dr. Death. It's based on true events that happened back in 2012 about this really sinister doctor that was just evil.
I kind of gathered that from the name.
And he was in Texas, Texas of all places. But here's a hint. If you want to watch it for free, you can get a free week of Peacock, binge watch it, and just cancel it out, and you can watch it for free, man.
And it's called Dr. Death.
Dr. Death, yep.
I'm sure after it's over,
Chris Slater's in it, Alec Baldwin.
Humming the theme music as I leave the theater.
Scott, hey. I am in jaw-gaping awe that you conjured up Steve. You rubbed your magic lamp, and out came Steve. Out popped Steve. You at least rubbed something. Yeah, you rubbed.
Steve's been listening, but Steve's been working. You know, and I was about ready to hop on anyhow. I've been working 2 days.
Will that conjuring principle work for, like, if I wanted $1 million to pop up on my sofa in a puff of smoke and sparkly things? Let me rub something. Hold on.
Yeah, keep rubbing something.
Avert your gaze, boys and girls. I'm about to rub something.
Robin, if he tries hard enough with his conjuring and rubbing his hands, can he bring back Rush for us? It's sadly missed.
No, I don't
You're
want
You're going to have to learn to live with disappointment, Jeremy, I'm afraid.
It's been so quiet. So quiet. I just, sometimes I have to pinch myself to see that it's not just a wonderful dream.
Radio silence. That's not good.
I was going to say, to turn into a nightmare, go silent here.
I think we were waiting for the punchline, Scott.
No, I it dawns on me at the weirdest times that, Rush is, he's no more. He's dead. He ain't him dead. He dead.
And he dead. I'm sorry. I get to do my Jesse Lee Peterson. He dead.
It's like the
Speaking
opposite.
Of Jesse Lee, where's he been, Robin? You haven't.
I haven't seen a Jesse Lee clip since God was a baby.
God damn, maybe he got COVID.
Maybe Jesse Lee's developed a persistent cough.
Well, or maybe he finally got into the rest of those bottles of Maker's Mark that were on the wall behind him.
That'll
in that one
it.
Clip. I'll have a mint julep. I'll have a mint julep. Hold the mint and the julep. Just give me the liquor.
I was speaking of drinks. I on TCM the other night. I was watching the classic movie Grand Hotel with Wallace Beery, a very young Joan Crawford. What's his name? Barrymore, John Barrymore, and Brother Lionel. Both of them standing upright and walking with both legs. Grand Hotel, great movie. And in one of the scenes, somebody mentions apparently a cocktail called a Louisiana Flip. Does anybody know what the hell a Louisiana
Flips
flip
were a
is?
Thing in the grand era of cocktails. I'm guessing
drink?
No, it's kind of frou-frou, but I think it has something to do with having like some whipped egg white in it or something. I haven't even cheated and looked it up.
Bartender, bring me a Louisiana flip.
Like Rogers Pisco Sours.
Rush Limbaugh's been dead for 149 days.
See, it's
Thank
the
you for
opposite.
The status update.
It's the opposite of Star Wars.
It still
Wars.
Smells like pineapple, I assume?
What is the opposite of there's been a disturbance in the Force? This is the anti-disturbance. This is a good thing in the Force, you know?
But he still lived to see what he fucking wanted to see, for the most part.
Trump lose?
Yeah, America fucked.
All that.
No, January 6th. Americans fighting Americans over some stupid bullshit.
Yeah, that he caused, or at least partially caused. Yes.
Yeah, I was right. I was Scott, I was right. A flip, the basic flip cocktail is
1.5 ounce of your preferred hooch, 1 small egg, 1 teaspoon of superfine sugar, 1/2 ounce of heavy cream, and freshly ground nutmeg. That's the basic flip. I don't know how you feel about drinking raw eggs, but it ain't my thing.
No, maybe once upon a time, but no more.
Oh, Pisco Sours are fantastic. No yolks, just the whites.
Just the whites, but boy, are they good. I mean, you can drink so many of those, you end up having to take a leak, and you stand up and forget why you stood up.
Well, I do that anyway.
Yeah, but your pants your pants remember, but you don't.
Well, it's just an easy way to wash your pants, all right.
I don't wear
pants. And here then, because you've afforded me an opportunity to find the recipe, a Louisiana flip is 2 ounces of spiced rum, 1 ounce of Cointreau, 2 ounces of fresh orange juice, 1 ounce of Rose's grenadine, 1 whole raw egg, 1 shaker half full of crushed ice, and 2 halved slices of an orange for garnish. You know what that sounds like? That's an Orange Julius with booze in it.
Yes.
It really is. Because part of the, I think, I was told long ago that part of the magic of the original Orange Julius was the fact that it had egg white in it.
I wonder if...
Are you supposed to play the Rocky theme while you drink that?
Okay.
I wonder if there's something else that you can use in lieu of egg white that will still promote the foam, as it were.
There is a jug of stuff you can get, and a lot of bars have it, and it's a foam number that's not egg-based but blends up like an egg-based foam to do their blender drinks at the bar. I'm not all sure what's in it, but it's a non-egg-based creates the foam like an egg does.
Now, since we're on this topic, one of my favorite drink references in film is in A Wonderful Life. Can anybody remember the drink that Clarence the Angel orders in Martini's Place, yeah, which isn't Martini's Place, but in fact is being run by Sheldon Leonard? And just to add another layer to it, when the drink is ordered, what does Sheldon Leonard say?
Well, he calls them pixies at one point, doesn't he?
You're absolutely right. The line is, "That's it, out you pixies go."
Yeah.
But what
is it? Mulled wine?
No.
Hot rum?
No. Well, okay, you got one word right.
Hot rum punch? Is that it?
Flaming rum punch.
Oh, flaming. Well, if we're gonna
200 milliliters of dark rum, 100 milliliters of brandy, freshly squeezed juice of 3 large oranges, 1 whole orange, 45 milliliters of grenadine, 500 milliliters of pineapple juice, 30 milliliters of sugar syrup, and 1 cinnamon stick and whole cloves, and you mix it all together and you pour rum on top and you light it.
Good Lord.
Jesus. I don't think I have all that shit in my
pocket. Do you need a permit from the fire marshal?
Well, wait a minute. Okay. So here's the instructions. And I mean, I couldn't do this without hurting myself. In a large jug, mix together the rum, brandy, the orange juice, the grenadine, the pineapple juice, and sugar syrup with the cinnamon stick. Cover and chill until needed. When ready to serve, either warm through in a pan if you're serving hot, then transfer the punch to a bowl, or if you're serving it cold, add ice cubes. Well, what's the point? It's not flaming then. But here's where it gets dangerous. Warm a couple of ladlefuls of brandy in a saucepan until it steams. Pour it over the orange slices and set fire to the brandy using a long match. Once, emphasis on the long part. Once the flames have died down, don't use your Bic.
No.
But any drink recipe that includes the line, "Once the flames have died down,"
Jesus.
Ladle the punch into glasses garnished with halved orange slices.
Good Lord.
If you still have all your fingers.
Right. Don't use your Bic, and especially don't use your mini Bic, or you're screwed. I mean, you're in the burn unit before
I found, I actually go through several of them because of the, you know, lighting the charcoal and stuff. I buy these, long-necked butane lighters. I found one yesterday that's got a gooseneck on it. It actually bends. I've got it in my hand right now.
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah.
Handy as hell.
Do you recommend those, Robin?
Yes. Because, like, when you're using a chimney and you've got to light the newspaper, it's a real pain in the ass to do it with a Bic. So I usually use one of the long necks. But if you can work it in there and bend the thing around, you get a much better and more even fire going in the newspaper, which then lights up the, which then gets the charcoal going in the chimney with the convection current that's created.
A gooseneck that bends. What kind of show is this?
There we go.
Hey, Robin, Billable has joined us, and he's got his hand up.
Oh, Billable, Rick, I'm so glad to hear from you, because when we were talking about the karaoke party at the Horn Inn, Billable, Brother Deacon Asa jumped in and said, no karaoke party. Billable Slick Rick will wipe the floor with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon. I didn't realize that I had such a fan club on the karaoke circuit, but I'll take it. Yeah. So, it's another beautiful day here in paradise. It's about 85 where I'm at. So not too bad. And just plugging away at the office here. So that's kind of the amount of excitement I've got. I did play golf earlier this week, but I can only play if I get out now at like 6 a.m. and get to work by 10. So it's kind of iffy, you know. We'll see how that goes. I'll try next Tuesday at 6 and see how that works, you know.
Hey, well, hey, I am working up my courage, Billable. I've been I think tomorrow evening for karaoke, I'm going to try my hand at One Night in Bangkok.
Oh, that's a good one.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Speaking of Singapore slings, I looked up that recipe since that sort of came up in connection with that in some way. I don't know why.
Oh, that was the lovely note I received. Yes.
Yeah.
From Singapore.
From Singapore. There's a lot of different varieties of that recipe. It's kind of hard to pin down the actual real recipe. But it's got a lot of flavors in it, from what I remember reading. Probably a good summer drink, though. I created a new drink, actually.
Well, I've got it for you, because I thought about it, because it's a Singapore sling, and it originated at the fantastic old hotel, the Raffles.
And, 1915.
Yeah, and, you always see, like, you know, well-heeled little old ladies sitting around sipping at them. There's a reason they sip. It's gin, cherry hearing, Cointreau, Benedictine, and then pineapple juice, lime juice, grenadine, and a little dash of bitters.
Yeah.
And you'll get where you're going in a hurry. And it's so very, very British, because it's got the gin in it. Or it might be Dutch. Gin. Remember, the Dutch invented gin.
Right. I created a new gin drink myself recently. They were out of the ginger beer at the bar, so I couldn't order a Moscow Mule. So I said, what do you recommend? They said, how about a Tanqueray and tonic? And I said, maybe let's do this. Why don't you add some grapefruit juice to it? Ooh, that is good. You ever had that?
I have to eschew all grapefruit products because of my daily consumption of a statin drug.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, they won't work if you drink grapefruit juice, and there's some antibiotics too. But you ever read much Hemingway, Billable?
What's that?
Have you ever read much Hemingway?
Quite a bit, yeah. Uh-huh.
You ever read Islands in the Stream?
I think I've read parts of it. Maybe I've read the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, in Islands in the Stream,
there is a reference to a drink that Hemingway invented in his Bimini days, and it's gin. The milk of you poke the hole in the coconut and you drain out the milk. It's gin, coconut milk, and lime juice over ice.
Oh my, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's because coconut, and you can probably get away now because everybody's so damn bougie. You could probably get away now with just buying coconut water.
Right, that would work. Yeah. Coconut water is actually very tasty. The hard thing about it
is the coconut shell, right? Yes.
No, you've got to kind of bake them in like 350 degree heat for maybe half an hour. And that softens them up, and then you get the hammer out.
Yeah, but see, when you're doing this, you just poke we always use the hammer, right, and a screwdriver. Just poke it through the eyes of the coconut and turn it over and drain it.
Right, right. The three eyes of the coconut, I think, right?
Yeah.
It's like three holes. Yeah, yeah, no.
In Thailand, Papa San's grandson climbed up the tree, got a coconut, come down, and they cut it up, opened it up with a machete.
Oh, there you go.
Once again, I try not to hurt myself under circumstances like that. And I would.
You got to be.
I'm an English major.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys. So you want to hear a really great, awesome story that just happened to me right now?
Yes. Awesome. Go, Tracy.
So I had to come up to Gardena to drop off the check for the school run account at our main. I was at the main office, and so I came back to my car, and I get a call. They sent it to me. They needed a minivan, and at first I'm like, oh, I don't feel like being bothered, because I'm thinking, if they need a minivan, that means they need luggage and all that other bullshit. And I'm like, no, I'm not feeling that right now. And so then they sent it back to me again, and they said, and then I saw what the order says. Large man, and I just realized where it was. It was picking up at the emergency room at Harbor UCLA Medical Center. And I got there, and it was this older gentleman, white guy. He was tall. And the reason why I needed a minivan is because it's either two kinds of cars that are used for taxis now in LA. It's either a Prius or a minivan. And since COVID, a lot of drivers quit, and a couple of companies actually went under. So I get there, and he had been waiting since 1:30. What happened? He was at Vons out here in Torrance, and he was on his way to go visit his wife, who has Alzheimer's, and today's her birthday. So he stopped at Vons to get her some flowers. And apparently he was walking into the Vons, tripped and fell, cracked his head open. It was so bad that they, there was a hospital right down the street, but they took him to a level one trauma unit. And so, long story short, he had been waiting since 1 o'clock this afternoon. The accident happened at 7, and he was just so grateful. He's like, sweetie, you are such a blessing. I thank God for you all day. And I said, I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in divine intervention, because what are the odds? I'm never this far south, never. So the odds that I today took a check and waited, and on top of the fact that had they had the check on time, it just the way everything worked out. So the meter ran $19.65. He paid me with a credit card and gave me a $50 tip.
Wow, Tracy.
In cash.
But that's all so sweet. What a horrible thing for him to endure. And then, hey, look, you got to be the angel.
Right. That's exactly what he said. I said, because yesterday was kind of the same thing. This lady, another call, I didn't really feel like working, but they kept sending me the call because I was the closest cab. And I went and picked her up, older black woman. Beautiful, beautiful skin. When she told me that she was 80, I like 80. Why are you lying? Because I can usually tell how old black folks are, But she, I can tell you this: this woman looked like that. She didn't even look like they over 40, maybe 50. I mean, smooth skin, not a wrinkle. And she had been waiting a long time too. And she was like, oh, honey, thank you. You're such a blessing. And then she was going on about how she, you know, other cab drivers have been rude to her. And she's like, I said, I hope you complained. And she's like, yes. See, the problem is all of a sudden the taxi business is back booming in LA right now because Uber and Lyft, because they can charge whatever they want. And I guess because of the, you know, they got that law passed that they're not independent contractors. So if you're not an independent contractor, then if you're an independent contractor, then you can charge whatever you want to charge. And the rates for Uber and Lyft are just ridiculous. They're like double and treble. And I'm like, and so people are starting to take cabs again. And we just don't have a lot of cabs anymore. It's just, we have at the school runs, there's still like 100 kids that still haven't been routed.
Because
we don't have enough cabs. And that's one of the reasons why I went back to work. Jan didn't want me to go back, but they really needed help. So I went back. But it was just like, yeah, you know, but it was, you know, I told him, I said, so, you know, the thing is, I don't have grandparents anymore. And if I start, it's just, it hurts me when I think about how this country treats our seniors, you know.
Absolutely.
It just doesn't make any sense, especially, you know, I think about the fact that this man was the same, if my grandmother was still alive, she would have been about 80-something years old. And, you know, I just think about, you know, the fact that anybody that's still, especially my age, that still has a grandparent, it's just something that you just don't take for granted, you know? But it just hurts my heart to think about, in this country, how, you know, how we treat our veterans, how we treat our seniors, how we just treat people in general. You know, if you don't have a certain income, if you're not a certain class, if you're not a certain gender, if you're not a certain ethnicity, you just get treated like shit. And I can't stand it. It's not right. But today and yesterday, I got a chance to be a finer angel or whatever, because I got to help two people that, like I said, if my grandmother was still alive, it could have been her. You know,
that's great, Tracy. Did the man tell you how many stitches he had to get?
His whole head was wrapped. His whole head was wrapped. He busted his shoulder. He could barely, So, spry old guy, you know, but and he was just so sweet. I gave him a hug because, but it was just, you know, just the fact that, you know, he told me that his wife she's in a care facility because she has Alzheimer's, but he had taken care of her for the first 12 years. And he finally, his daughters were like, you can't do this anymore, Dad. So thank God he has the resources to put her in a really good care facility, because brother man, Papa Spit gave me the American Express Platinum card, y'all. So
hey, can we give a cowbell to the guardian angel lady cab driver, Robert?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt about it.
What a great story, Tracy.
It was just awesome, and it just really, made my day. And I had the guys on mute, and you know, so. But I'm glad there was enough time in the show to drop him after I dropped him off to tell you guys the story, because it's one of those things with all the ugly shit that we have to deal with, not on a daily, but on a minute by minute basis in this country. We need joy. We need some joy.
Yeah, we do.
That part. So, okay.
Tracy, you weren't here to hear this, but a couple weeks ago, Faith was on, and I mentioned how you, Jude, and her all have soothing voices. Your stories calm all of us. You make us all feel rational again.
It's so true.
despite the rage we feel about a lot of things, you calm us down with sensibility.
But you know what, Jeremy? Jeremy, that has a broader meaning too, and it speaks to something, you know, because we analyze the right wing media and stuff like that. There's a reason that Alex Jones sounds like Alex Jones. You can't listen to 2 minutes of that without getting pissed off.
Right. Mark Levin. Do your Mark Levin, Robin.
Oh, Mark Levin with the voice made for print?
Hey, Tracy?
Yes?
Take a look in the chat box for the porch, the front porch. There's a... It's a saying, and I forget now how I discovered it, but it's been sort of like, for the past several years, my approach to life. In other words, you wake up in the morning or the afternoon or whenever the hell you wake up, and it's like if you – and let me just read the thing for those who haven't looked. It says, at the moment of commitment, the entire universe – conspires to assist you. And there's something liberating about just showing up for life and dancing with it as it unfolds and finding your little spot in it. And that encounter with the older man who cracked his head and hurt his clavicle or whatever, I mean, that's just you showing up and getting the benefits that come with that. Some people are afraid to let life is a dance, and in a dance you've got to let life lead, and that's what you did and do. At least that's my two cents.
Face in the room.
Hey, Scott.
Yes, sir.
That comes from the book The Alchemist.
Isn't it like a German philosopher who wrote that originally, or?
No, it's Paulo Coelho. It's Paulo Coelho. He's
okay.
From Brazil.
Faith has her hand up.
Go, Faith.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to say hi. That's all.
Well, hi, Faith.
How are you, Robin?
I'm okay. I'm doing well. And I enjoy our interactions over on Instagram, and I love seeing your work. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. It's been a while since I've been on. I have to add a whole bunch more stuff, and sometimes I get a little crazy about it. Like there's so much, and so I'm like that I stay off for a while because I'm like, crap, there's too much to do. But it's good. Thank you so much. That means the world to me, really.
Oh, I just sit and I do. I sit and wonder at it. It's amazing what you do.
That means the absolute world to me. Thank you.
Wonderful. And what a lovely, uplifting way to bring an end to Friday on the Front Porch. A beautiful, beautiful story from Tracy, and a chance to say hi to Faith. You guys are just wonderful. It's been a rousing conversation. They always are, somehow or another, on Friday on the Front Porch. And, well, I'm already looking forward to more on Monday. Thanks to everyone who keeps this program going. Thanks for helping us knock down the fundraising goal. We will go into Monday at 6:55. Maybe it'll come down some over the course of the weekend with the overnight or over weekend crew. Thanks to all of our partial sponsors of the program, our subscribers at Patreon and PayPal, a la carte contributors, challengers, respondents to challenges. Thank you one and all, because that's how it really is a little community made miracle every time the mic hots up, because little independent liberal progressive radio operations aren't supposed to be able to survive for almost two decades, but we do. Thank you to our dear friend in Singapore for making my day with that lovely note. Thank you to our all volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, at the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you so choose. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on.live.
Remember, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, with, hey, a guest host sitting in for Malloy, who's taking a long weekend, the Malloys are. And you might even know who she is. And the best place, like I said, to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Thank you so very much. I got a lot of work to do this weekend. I got some coffee mugs sitting here ready to go out. I got to rewrite the program intro. We are going to make that happen. Just tired of hearing about Bob. Thank you to all of you who reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia, and your efforts are deeply appreciated. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine. If you haven't gotten your vaccine, get it soon. Encourage others to get theirs. And we're back to having to take our first line defenses very seriously if at any point we stopped. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. I think I'm going to be wearing gloves again soon. And I'm going to be wearing a mask anywhere that I don't know everybody is vaccinated. I proudly wore mine into Wally World and Tractor Supply today. Yes, I am. I'm subbing for Malloy this evening, Ralphs. Yeah, thank you. Maintain your social distance. Do everything you can to stay safe because the maggots and the anti-vaxxers are doing everything they can to hurt this country. Thank you to our anonymous friend who just took us down to, knocked us down for the evening to 300 and, where were we? 325. Thank you. And, you know, if somebody comes toward you talking about how, well, I'm going down to Texas because there's some real good oil billionaires down there who want to give me some money, avoid that man like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.